Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. After failing to retain the Ohio Cup, Reds look to bounce back Thursday hosting the Pirates in game one of a four-game set. Nate Lowe drove in Ellie De La Cruz for the walk-off winner in the ninth. 3-2 was the final score from Great American. Both teams are back at it tonight at 6:10. Hear that game on The Fan following the Buckeye Show. The Guardians had Thursday off. Cleveland's back home Friday hosting Arizona. They enter the weekend two back of the White Sox for the top spot in the AL Central. In college hoops, Ohio State's in Puerto Rico for a pair of exhibition games this coming Sunday and Monday. The team announced an exhibition against Butler Sunday, October 25th at the Shot. The Buckeyes will also play Cincinnati in the CareSource Invitational October 7th. OSU opens the regular season Monday, November 2nd in Salt Lake City, taking on BYU. This update is sponsored by Vermeer Heartland. Vermeer Heartland opens in Columbus August 3rd. Get the Vermeer equipment you trust, genuine parts, and expert service. Visit VermeerHL.com.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Dom Tabari here.
Oh, Reese came in, and he handed me papers.
Yeah,
and then it's a rundown. And then he said, you see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me. Oh, I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging, and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
All right, let's do it live on a Friday edition of the program. Both the boys with you for the next three. Loaded up on a Friday edition. Tim May will join at 9:44 today. Doug Lamarise coming up at 10:30. 10 o'clock, what we learned this week, and then 20 most interesting stays and concludes the week in the Deep South with the Georgia Bulldogs. Former Georgia quarterback Buck Belue going to join us at 11:30 to preview the Dogs and the SEC this year. Next week, it'll be all Big Ten teams as we culminate with Thursday and Friday practice. Where we will be live out at Ohio State's first 2 days of camp. Big Ten media days are in the books. And I started to think about this just from a big picture perspective. And give it a beat and think about it yourself. What is the best the Big Ten has ever been in your lifetime? Now, I'm not talking about Ohio State and Michigan, because I think the apex of that was probably the 10-year war, was probably the apex of that. And then the end of Harbaugh, from an outsider's perspective, certainly had a lot of intrigue and was pretty dang good. A lot of number one versus number two, two versus four, top five matchups, those type of things. I'm not talking about Ohio State and Michigan necessarily, although I think those two are critical to the view of when was the Big Ten this good. The best I could come up with was probably the mid-90s. Was probably the best that it was in terms of elite national championship caliber teams being ran out. You had Penn State had just entered the league. They were an absolute buzzsaw with Kajana Carter and Kerry Collins and all of that. And that really runs through the end of the 90s with LeVar Arrington and Courtney Brown going 1-2 in the draft and all of that. There were several years where Penn State was a contender. Ohio State, despite the losses to Michigan and the loss of 98 to Michigan State, was a national championship contender during most of the mid-90s. They were in the mix. Michigan won the league's only national championship in the decade in 97, but they were near the top of it. That was the best I could do. I know that there was some time in the 80s where it was a bunch of really good football, but there weren't national champions in that time. There wasn't an elite program in that time. The 70s obviously had Ohio State and Michigan, and as elite as they were, but the Buckeyes won the national titles in 68, but
There's nothing in the 70s in terms of that at the highest. I mean, you have some where you're voted in, but in terms of what would be considered consensus national champions, eight, but there's nothing in the 70s in terms of that at the highest. I mean, you have some where you're voted in, but in terms of what would be considered consensus national champions, the Big Ten doesn't have a lot there. So it's probably the 90s. You won one, but you played. You had three teams every year that kind of felt like they could go get it. I think the real answer is right now. I think it's right now. I think this is the best the league's ever been. I think the combination of wealth from a television contract that, albeit, puts quite a bit of stress on us with the consistent big noon kicks, but a television contract that pays out in a big, big way. I think you couple with that with NIL, where you have a bunch of rich institutions up here who are now throwing money at programs, at coaches, at players. I think the expansion added to it. Basically, what you get every year, because you now have Oregon in this league, is you have another team that has eyes on a national title. The entire time Oregon's been in the Big Ten, they've been national championship contenders. And they've been national title contenders for most of the last 20 years. They've been in the mix for it. They've played for a couple of them and have been knocking on the door for 20 years, really, going all the way back to Bilotti. USC is on the come a little bit. And then you get this gift from the gods that is Kurt Cignetti at Indiana. From a conference perspective, whatever I may think of the state, he did it. He did it in the biggest way possible. He brought some of his guys early, and then he got NIL invigorated, and away you go. And so now we're in this situation where you play the game of how many teams in this conference could win a national title, and it's three as a jumping off point. And then we'll see what happens at USC. We'll see what happens with Whittingham at Michigan, not this year, but in the next couple of years. We'll see what happens with Matt Campbell at Penn State. But it's three right away. And how many times in your lifetime, the collective you, can you recall a time where you would wake up in August and go, there's three Big Ten teams that can win national titles this year? Or would not be surprised if they did. It hasn't happened all that often. Maybe the mid-90s. Wasn't here, obviously, at that time, so I can't speak to that. But that's my hunch of when it was probably the time when you felt the best of it. Pose that question to the two of you. When has this league been better than it is right now?
It hasn't. But the 90s, 96, I think a plucky Northwestern team made the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
But you also had Ohio State. You had Michigan. Every year were a national championship contention. Iowa was always pretty solid. I remember in the late 90s, even in the early 2000s. But it's right now. It's no better. It's no better on the football field. I forget Penn State sometimes, but the late 90s was them every year thinking this is our year. But it's no better than when the conference commissioner stands up with the last three national championship trophies.
Yeah.
The 90s is a good answer. As you mentioned, Reese, that I believe it was 1995 Rose Bowl where Northwestern got there. Wisconsin, that was kind of the beginning of their run to national prominence with Barry Alvarez and everything. Penn State was really good. Michigan, Ohio State every year seemed like they were in things. The other thing I think of is kind of the beginning of Urban Meyer here at Ohio State, because Michigan State was so good. They were a dominant team then. Wisconsin was still good. You had Penn State. Michigan might have been down a little bit. But the Michigan State jumping up kind of took them. So those were the two eras that I were thinking of that could rival right now, is the mid-90s and then the beginning of Urban Meyer here. And you had a couple Purdue teams that were decent right around then.
But look what we're doing there. We're talking about, we aren't talking about national title contenders, though. Like, nobody thought Michigan State was going to win a national title.
Let's do the Big Ten thing and claim Nebraska.
In the 90s.
And then you're really cooking.
We had the program of the 90s all of a sudden in the Big Ten.
Can we take USC, too, in the early 2000s? USC?
Yeah, there you go.
Did now they we're really win anything humming. In the 2000s, though?
They got the one that wasn't taken away. So I think it's right now. I think when you think of Tony Pistidi standing at that dais on Tuesday and standing there with three national championships. And I did some radio in Atlanta yesterday for a buddy of mine, and did a hit, and we were talking about, you know, Big Ten Media Days and Ohio State and all this stuff. And this was before Cignetti had to say what he had to say, and we'll play that for you in a second. But we were talking about the Big Ten, and I said, you know, kind of like what we talked about yesterday, Bucks and Ducks, like those two teams, like it wouldn't surprise me if those two teams played three times and played for a national title. And I got no pushback. nor should I get any pushback. Those two teams are going to be both in the top four in the country. I mean, one's going to be two. One could be one. One's going to be two. The other one's going to be three or four. It's going to be Ohio State, Texas, Notre Dame, and Oregon in the top four. You're going to have two of the top four teams in the country. You're going to have the defending national champions, the national champions from 2 years ago, and then you got Michigan, who was a national championship 3 years ago. So you're walking into this season with three national title contenders. I don't know that the league's ever had that. I mean, there might be something in the 50s, like pre, you know, I'm talking like segregation stuff in the South, 50s type stuff.
Back when Minnesota won three in a row.
There might be something back there, but like in modern times, in the last 50 years, I think this is it. I think this is the best it's ever been. And I think not only the talent, but the coaches, the personalities, the winning on the field, all of it. I think this is the best time the Big Ten's ever had right now. And I think they have more power than they've ever had ever. And I think they're flexing it a little bit. And it's kind of fun to be in the middle of it. It's fun to look at the Ohio State schedule this year and go, wow, there are five games that you look at and you go, okay, better bring a lunch pail to those games. And one of those games will obviously be Indiana. And that's the other part. It's one thing to be good. It's quite another thing to be good and know it. It's quite another thing to be good and say it out loud. It's quite another thing to be good and be chesty. Kurt Cignetti is all of those things. He had a field day at Big Ten Media Days. We're going to have that for you coming up next. Also, Kyle Whittingham with some thoughts on hate and the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry. It was strange seeing him in maize and blue. I'll just say that. We'll get to that coming up next. We're off and running on a Friday. Bishop and Friends right here.
Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Football fall camp is coming. Will Julian Sayin take his game to the next level? Will Matt Patricia's defense dominate again? Join us live for training camp fun starting Thursday, August 6th. Your home of the Buckeyes. Woo! The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Partly sunny skies for us today. It's filtered cloud cover works in from the west. Highs reach the mid to upper 80s. Overnight, increasing clouds, lows in the upper 60s. We'll top out pretty close to 80 on Saturday. More clouds and sunshine. Spotty showers and thunderstorms, especially as the day goes on. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. They'll offer betting advice, but don't bet on it being good. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Ohio State fans, your first look at the 2026 Buckeyes is here. Join us August 6th through the 8th at the Woody Hayes Athletic Center, Ohio State football training camp presented by SafeLight, Bob's Discount Furniture. Watch practice live, get autographs, take photos of select players, and experience the start of the new season up close. Tickets are limited. They're going fast. Just $48 for general admission or upgrade to VIP for shaded seating, refreshments, and more. Secure your spot today at OhioStateBuckeyes.com. Don't miss your chance to be part of the Buckeye Nation's kickoff to 2026. Look, the crazy thing about all of this is, from our perspective, Ohio State's been in the mix for 50 years. But a lot of these programs have not been, and obviously Indiana is chief among them. What we have now in Kurt Cignetti, I kind of stumbled upon this yesterday after hearing his comments at Big Ten Media Days, which just tickled me to death. He is essentially, and remember, he's an assistant at Bama, he's essentially kind of a Saban Spurrier mix. Is what he is. Not saying he's going to win that much, going to win six national titles, but perhaps he's already done something more impressive than either one of those guys. And then he won a national championship and had a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback in a perfect season at Indiana. But he's been around the block. He knows how to coach, and he wins big. I mean, he beat the brakes off of Bama in the playoff last year, the brakes off of him. So he can be quite chesty with how good his program is. And yesterday he was asked about the SEC and Big Ten and had a pretty damn good answer. Let's have a listen.
The Big Ten is the best league in football. A lot of really good football teams. It's hard to win on the road. Very physical football teams, very well coached. It definitely prepares you for the playoffs. There's no doubt about it. The numbers speak for themselves. I mean, we don't run a hype machine up here in the Midwest. We believe everything's earned, not given. And when we fall short, We say we fell short. We don't cry a river, whine, and complain. All right? And that's why we're the best.
You think he was ready for that?
Yeah, he'd been practicing that line.
It's a great line.
Kind of a hype machine in the Midwest.
Pretty sure he'd been planning it since they won it all.
I think you're probably right.
Some of it, though, is pretty wrestling heel out of him, or I guess wrestling promo.
That
he's
Spurrier,
so
though.
Good at this, mm-hmm. and he's been doing it since he walked on the floor at Bloomington.
You guys, I mean, I covered Steve at Florida, so I saw it firsthand how he would be. He reminds me of Spurrier. There's a lot of Spurrier in that, of a, we're good, we know it, and I'm going to tell you about it. There's a lot of just straight talk. There's a lot of needling. Spurrier would needle constantly. I think Cignetti's going to needle a lot. We haven't really had a coach around here do that in my lifetime. I mean, Urban a little, but not to the point of like calling out another league like that or any of that. But to be fair, I guess Urban, we were never in the position where we had multiple teams competing for national titles the way we do now.
On Tebow and Tyvus this morning, they were talking about this and why so many Ohio State fans or people just don't like him or believe in him. And I think one is his opening statements. He said Ohio State sucks. He said Michigan sucks. He said Purdue sucks. He called mm-hmm. them all out and yeah. said they sucked. But he
two
mentioned,
of three he was right about.
He mentioned Ohio State by name. So I think that sticks in a lot of Ohio State fans' craw. But also, he took something from us last year.
Yeah, he did.
He beat Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game. And Ohio State fans and us, we can sit here and we can make all the excuses we want about that game. But he beat us. Indiana mm-hmm. beat Ohio State in that yeah. Big Ten championship game. And then they went out and won the national championship.
That's right. Yeah.
So it hurts when they take something from you. It's one of the reasons the Michigan rivalry is what it is, because Michigan has taken so much from you over the years. Now, you've taken a lot from them, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it also, you don't expect Indiana to take stuff from you.
No. I mean, guys, I said that even when I was doing, you know, when I was sitting down in June and, like, writing down the programs I wanted to do for 20 Most Interesting. Like, initially, I forgot Indiana. Like, that's happened to me several times this offseason where I forget. You'll hear me talk. If you listen closely, like we'll talk about, you know, back in the spring, we'll talk about national title contenders or whatever, and I'll leave Indiana off out of habit. It's a lot to get used to what he did there, but I think we got to get used to it because I don't think he's going anywhere. And, you know, he's in his early 60s, so he's probably not going to coach there for 15 years, but my hunch is going to be there for the next 10. And I don't sense that there's going to be a massive drop off. I mean, he just landed a 5-star receiver last week. Like, didn't he beat Ohio State for the kid?
He did. The 5-star yeah. receiver committed on the Pat McAfee show.
Yeah.
On ESPN.
In Indianapolis on ESPN to Indiana. So yeah. like now all of a sudden it's up a notch. I think we're going to get to a point, like if he beats us again this year, then you're going to get to a point where there's hatred, right? Because now you hit it, Bake. That's always been my definition of a rivalry. Somebody has to take something from you. It can't just be one-sided. You can't win 10 in a row and call it a rivalry. It's not. It's got to be a little bit of give and take. They have to inflict some pain on you, and Michigan's inflicted a lot, and we've inflicted a lot on them. But now we have Indiana inflicting a little bit. I mean, you got 100 years of history that you're going to have a tough time overcoming. They hadn't beaten Ohio State since the 80s, for God's sakes. So this is going to take a little bit of getting used to, not that I want to, but I think that's probably it. I think there's so many Buckeye fans out there that are in just disbelief that this happened. Like, it's just hard. We do this for a living. It's hard to wrap your head around the fact of what he pulled off. And then he comes out and he's like, yeah, I did it. And watch what I do this year. And they get another quarterback in the portal and they're doing it in recruiting and they've got the money behind him now. And now why not Indiana? He's done it. So I'm not one of those who doesn't respect the hell out of the guy. I thought he was annoying in year one. Annoying. Drove me nuts. Like, I loved Will Howard putting the cigarette out on the sideline year one. I loved it. I thought his schedule was nonsense in year one, and I thought that he was chesty for no reason in year one. I thought he was a paper tiger in year one. And Notre Dame bullied him in a playoff game, and they weren't quite ready for that stage. But what did he do? He went in the portal. He got himself the best portal quarterback in Fernando Mendoza. Don't act like Fernando, like everybody wanted Mendoza. Everybody did. And he went and got him. And he got Mendoza. And then he put him in a position to succeed, and they did it all. And so he's not a paper tiger. He's a Bengal tiger. And they're not going anywhere. And they won the national title, and he's going to be around for a while. So we got to get used to it. Now, this makes our league better. I mean, this makes our league more interesting. Just think if this was old Indiana on the schedule, and you did, and all of a sudden that, if just old Indiana and you're going over there, I mean, guys, you guys know this, but like for the longest time when media guides were a thing, they wouldn't take their overhead picture of the stadium until they played Ohio State because all of the red looked the same in the photograph. That was the only time they were guaranteed to have a full stadium is when the Buckeyes were over there. That was a Buckeye home game. That's not going to be the case this year. Like, he's done it. So he can be chesty. I mean, I'm thinking about like Paul's show today. Or maybe even yesterday when they had the audio of it. What are you going to say? I was on radio in Atlanta yesterday. Like, what's their retort? Oh, yeah, well, we were good 10 years ago. Okay. Great.
Well, Nick Saban said you don't have to win the national title to be the best.
Yeah. What's he doing? Moving the goalposts.
Think he's ever believed that in his life?
No. Good Lord. Like, what is he talking about? So I think that we're on this show and the audience who loves college football, we're in the best spot that I think we've ever been in terms of the intrigue and interest around the sport and around this league. And this league is in a tremendous position of power for the foreseeable future. You have engaged alumni bases in all sorts of places. And who knows what happens at Michigan State if they ever get engaged. Like, if they really do. Who knows what happens at USC if all of a sudden they start throwing money around at NIL? That's a pretty easy place to recruit to. If Lincoln can have one good year, what about if Matt Campbell has a good year in year one at Penn State? You sure that he can't turn it into something pretty quickly? Maybe it isn't. Even if it's no better than what they had with Franklin, if you got another team in this league that's winning 9 to 10 games and a consistent playoff team, that's a win. And you can kind of apply that around the league. There's all sorts of spots. Like Washington, you can win at Washington. They played in a national championship game, 3 years ago? You can win there in a big way.
Bielema at Illinois.
Bielema at Illinois. Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing. I was talking with Fish and I were talking about this a couple weeks ago, but like, you got Hyatt money at Illinois. You got Shad Khan is an Illinois alumnus. Like, if Illinois starts throwing around money, if Illinois wanted to have a $50 million roster, they could have a $50 million roster tomorrow.
What if Pat Fitzgerald gets everything settled at Michigan State?
So I did get quite a bit of pushback because I mentioned Michigan State. The host down there asked me, he's like, well, is there anybody up there who you think could do like what Indiana did, kind of come out of nowhere? And I mentioned Michigan State. And he goes, they were so awful offensively. And he was like 5-20 in his last couple of years at Northwestern. And he was like, all that's true. But I mentioned what we've said before. Like, they have three engaged billionaire boosters, and two of them, they play off each other with Ishbia and Gilbert. And kind of play off each other for money. So, yeah. I mean, could Michigan State, if they wanted to, have a $50 million roster? Yeah, they could. Now, do kids want to? Can Fitzgerald sell it the way Cignetti sold it? We'll see. We'll see on that. But this is a good time, man. In fact, I think it's the best time that the Big Ten's ever had. I think it's the most talent the Big Ten's ever had. I think it's the most national titles the Big Ten has ever been capable of winning. And I think it's probably the most interesting group of coaches we've had. So there were some interesting groups in the 80s when you had Earl and Hayden Fry and Shim Beckler and all of that. There were certainly some very interesting characters in the league then. But Cignetti helps. He does. And it's okay not to like him because he's now taken something from you. But definitely don't disrespect him, because he's done all of that too. Kyle Whittingham is the coach at Michigan. It looked odd. You'll hear from him on the rivalry. You'll hear from him on how he is going to approach that job with scandal everywhere. We will get to all of that in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE. Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
Sponsored by Apex Pros. The pros who knows.
All right, here's what's up on a Friday edition of the program. Big Ten Media Days in the books. Yesterday was Indiana. Yesterday was Michigan. If you were to go back a year from now and said you get 1,000 guesses on who the next head coach at Michigan would be, I'm not sure I would have ever landed on Kyle Whittingham. Truly. I didn't see any connection, didn't see any sort of possibility. He felt like a guy who was going to be at Utah for 25 years, win a bunch and retire. We've seen the game day pieces of him where he would, you know, go to work in the morning and then ski in the afternoon and then go back to work. He does the same thing with his bike, like all of these things, this lifestyle that he had in Salt Lake City. And it just felt like that was going to be it. He's going to coach that last year at Utah, and that was going to be it. And obviously, we had no idea what was coming with Sherrone Moore. We knew he was a patsy because Reese told us he was a patsy, and he was right. We knew Sherrone Moore was a patsy, but we had no idea that it would end in such a spectacular flameout and disturbingly spectacular flameout as it did with Sherrone Moore there. They went for someone outside of the Michigan man circles, and you can't get more outside the Michigan man circles than Kyle Whittingham is. He is as outside as can be. This thing could be a spectacular success for them. It could be a spectacular failure. I think it's the widest gap of success and failure of any team in the country this year, almost. I really think it could go a number of ways. One thing I do know is the guy can coach. That I do know. Now, does his roster fit him? I don't know. Does his quarterback fit him? I don't know. Will the Michigan man leave him alone? History tells us no. They will not leave him alone. They will meddle and they will try to do those things. Then how does he handle that? So to begin with Kyle, I think the most important thing is that he is a clean slate from their perspective for that program. And so he was asked yesterday about the program being ready to move on from its recent set of issues. Here was his answer to that.
Reality, there has been a lot of drama, as I mentioned before. We hope that we've come to the end of that and we're ready to proceed just with the business of playing football and winning football games and graduating players and putting the emphasis on things that should have the emphasis. But, you know, there were some unfortunate things that happened. It's not my place to really speak out on it. I wasn't there. I was not involved. But I can tell you right now, we've got a very hungry and willing group of players that have been nothing but have worked their tail off for the last 7 months and are eager to get the season started. And they've got very good leadership as well. And so I'm just excited to, you know, make the first thing first, which is graduating and winning football games.
Yeah, I mean, he just sounds...
It's an A-plus answer.
It is. It just sounds... It's going to take some getting used to.
You know what, though? And I noticed this with a lot of his comments yesterday.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's necessarily wrong, mm-hmm. but he mentioned graduating players and student mm-hmm. athletes and a lot of things from the past in college sports. And I just wonder, and I think he's a great coach. I think what he did at Utah was phenomenal for that long. But there's a reason Utah was ready to move on from him and start mm-hmm. a new era. And I wonder if that's it, if he's just not ready to adapt to the times.
It's a good point, and it's interesting picking up on that. Go ahead, Reese.
Well, I didn't see it that way. I saw it as he had a bingo card and he just started checking off boxes. Like he did the, like the coach thing. Yeah, it's all the coach speak and addressing the biggest elephant in the room. It's not like what Brent Yormark did. We're like, well, we're not here to talk about those things. So it's like, well, really, what we, the Royal, we are interested in is everything but Michigan's football team right now, and we'll get into some football stuff, but you're hiring, the process, the scandal, all of that, we're interested in how that relates to you. And he answered it, and then he added everything that you kind of want to hear a coach say. If you're a Michigan man, if you're a booster or one of his bosses, you're like, that's great.
I think you both can be right. I think it can be both that he was growing a little long in the tooth at Utah, and they needed somebody who was a little bit more progressive when it came to this style of college football. It's probably especially as they were looking to the south at BYU and going, okay, well, that's coming pretty quickly at us, and they're pretty organized on the NIL front, and we're not quite as open to that as as we had been. And so I think it can be that. And it can also be he's been around a long time and he knows this is what you say. I think it can be both. I still think the fit is a very strange one for Michigan. He was asked about the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry. Let's hear from Kyle Whittingham on that.
I haven't learned really much more than I already knew. I mean, it's a national game. I mean, everybody knows about it. It's the game, as we call it. And it's of great importance, obviously, to both sides. But I'm an old school coach. You know, we got 11 games that we play before that, so we're not going to get ahead of ourselves. But make no mistake, I understand the implications that it has. A friend of mine, Urban Meyer, you know, he was at the other place for a few years, and we'd talk about the game during the, you know, over the course of that time span. And so very well versed in what it means, the intensity of it, the national allure that it has, and our players are the same. I mean, everybody knows that game's looming out there, and I think the best case scenario, it comes down to that 12th game, and that's for all the marbles in the Big Ten. I think that would be ideal, and so hopefully that happens.
He was also asked about hatred in a rivalry. You can't manufacture it. Here was his answer on that.
I don't know what that dynamic was. I know it. I thought Ryan was a pretty good guy when I met with him, or not met with him, but interacted with him in the Rose Bowl. And based on what, again, Urban has told me about it, I just think that a rivalry can be intense and emotional without the hatred factor. I don't think there's any place for that personally. I think Ryan Day's a good person. And to sit here and say, I hate Ryan Day, I'd be making crap up, because that's not true.
Yeah, and I think the Urban connection on both of these really weighs in. He did say that he would welcome Urban to practice every week with one, which was a funny line. The, you know, I don't know that Woody and Bo hated each other. I just think they desperately wanted to win that game. And if you've read books on it, or you've watched the documentary on the 10-year war, like, incredible friendship before and after. Just for those 10 years, they didn't talk, except for at midfield before that game. And they desperately wanted to beat each other. I think Kyle Whittingham knows that. I also think, like, one of the things that was so annoying with Brady Hoke when he first got hired, he jumped out. This one, he really jumped out to me. And he actually, you know, obviously had the Michigan history. But, like, he was trying to manufacture it back in. Harbaugh had it. Like, he played it, lived it. And then he had the heartbreak early on in his tenure and all of those losses to Urban out of the gates. And so that's where the hatred, I think, really took off was at that time. That's when and Herb Street's talked about this. A lot of people have talked about it. The venom that has been in the rivalry at the end of Harbaugh with the Spygate stuff and then through Sherrone Moore, that to me, I mean, you think about the fights at the end, that to me was the most hatred, vitriolic period of the rivalry was at that time. It's not Marcus Hall flipping off the Big House. It's not that. That's not. No, it's the Harbaugh, from Harbaugh doing this here through Harbaugh, through Sherrone Moore last year. That's the most in my time here, my 20 years here. That's the most vitriol the rivalry's ever had.
Yeah, there's hatred, there's vitriol on both sides. But I think for Whittingham, who's parachuting into all of this, trying to keep things as measured as humanly possible.
I think two
it's
things.
It's genuine, too. Like, he can't sit here and act like he hates
Ohio State. What does he hate Ohio State for?
Yeah. Like, he has no reason to.
Been in Utah for 25 years.
Played him in a Rose Bowl. He doesn't have any point of reference on it. He's buddies with Urban. Ryan's buddies with Urban. They're both disciples of Urban. Like, it'd be ridiculous, disingenuous for him to come up there and say, I hate Ohio State. I mean, so at least he was real with his answer.
I think two things can be true, though, right? And it was the thing with Woody and Bo. They respected the hell out of each other, and they respected the hell out of each other's programs, but they hated
but
to
they
lose
were from
that
here.
Game. But that's but so
they
so,
grew up in.
So that's another maybe issue here for Michigan moving forward. And Ohio State has seen this. Ohio State didn't have a great run against Michigan when John Cooper was here.
Yeah,
he wasn't from here. And then the Ryan Day era started off with he won that first one, then they lost the four, and Ryan was a guy that wasn't from here. Now, I believe Ryan has grown to hate to lose to Michigan now. I don't know if that was there at the very beginning. And this may be an issue.
He probably always did.
This may be an issue for Michigan. I wonder what Michigan fans are saying about the comments that Kyle Whittingham yesterday had about the rivalry.
Well, we'll ask Angelique Chingalis, because she'll be on with us on Monday, about how all of that landed at when we do Michigan 20 Most Interesting on Monday. We'll see how all of that lands with them. I also think beggars can't be choosers. Like, who wanted that job? The place is a mess. You know, they wanted DeBoer. DeBoer, to me, feels like he used them to get a contract extension at Alabama to take some of the heat off of that. Like, where else were they going to go if not this way? You know what I mean? Like, there weren't people lining up to take that job in the state of disarray that that place was in. So I think he will at worst keep the ship steady at worst.
Do any of us believe Kyle Whittingham is still the coach in 5 years?
No.
Yeah.
No. I think it's a 2-3 year Band-Aid, quick fix, keep the ship sailing. You're not going to sail.
He's the real bridge and an adult. Sharon was just the scapegoat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's an adult in the room. Like, you're not. I'm not going to embarrass you. We're going to lose some games for sure. I'm not going to recruit the way that they did at the end of Harbaugh, Memore, none of that. But steady it. You won't be you're not going to be embarrassed by anything that I do. Tim May was over at Big Ten Media Days all week. He'll join us next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
You ever met a man who wins money betting on tennis? Enter Scotty Vegas. Join Scotty and Dave Biddle for On the Money.
Presented by Ohio for Responsible Gambling.
Sunday mornings at 9 on The Fan.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Patriot Air Comfort Systems and Bryant.
Doing whatever it takes to keep your home comfortable.
The Fan.
Find us on YouTube. Search WBNS Radio and you can see what Bo looks like. But only if you subscribe. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, time down on the Bryant Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Conversation with our good buddy Tim May of the Tim May Show with Clay Hall on FanStream Sports. You were over in Chicago this week at the Capone Hilton, as I am dubbing it. What did you, big picture, Big Ten, what jumped out?
There's a brashness to the Big Ten that wasn't there 3 years ago. It's almost a subtle brashness, but there is brashness. And I think that's a good thing. You know, what, 2-3 years ago, you and I, everybody was having discussions about Tony Petitti. Where is he? Where is he when it comes to asserting yourself like Greg Sankey? Everybody wants to thank Greg Sankey. But as I just tweeted a little while ago, I think Petitti bided his time and is now striding forward. It always helps when you got three trophies standing next to you on the stage.
Yeah, it
does. I know Wrinkled, your buddy. I guess he's my buddy. I don't know. Paul Feinbaum.
He's our buddy. Yeah, he's our buddy.
I mean, but you know, he's got to uphold whatever's going on with the SEC. But the bottom line is, hey, you know what? You don't have to brag when you got the three trophies standing there next to you. And Brett Bielema, he missed the mark with his comment about, and still 2005, and it's I think he meant more like 2015, you know, in that era when Alabama was still holding sway, but and a little bit of maybe a couple other guys, but yeah, the main thing is the Big Ten is pretty damn good, and now they're not afraid to say it.
Tim, you've been around this league for a long time, and I was listening to Cignetti's comments, which were hilarious, obviously. He's got a little spurrier to him. He's a little spurrier with the way he goes about his business is what he reminds me of, and I'm for it. Like, I think it wins. Is this the best the Big Ten's ever been? I mean, Tim, we're talking
in terms of
not only national you got three legit national championship contenders in the league, maybe more.
Yeah.
And you have really interesting people running these programs. I mean, you've been around this league since the late 70s, like, and covered Ohio State since the early 80s. I think this is it. I think this is the best the Big Ten's ever been.
I would agree with you. I mean, now, you know, back in the 80s, you know, I mean, Michigan State was pretty good in the late 80s. I mean, Ohio State, Michigan, you know, and then when they got Penn State in there, it was there were you know, some guys have come and gone. I mean, like, you know, like you asked me a couple of weeks ago about what program do I see that could be on the rise down the road. That's Michigan State, you know, with Pat Fitzgerald. Sure. Because, but you know why? Because Michigan State has been there before. You know,
that's that old line,
John Cooper. As John Cooper said, you know, when you're going to hire me, the first thing you ought to look at, I ought to look at, is what have you done, you know, in your press guide? What championships have you won? But, mm-hmm. I mean, dude, I mean, Ryan Day was talking about this on Wednesday in our group, in our little group chat together, is that, I mean, you look at this league, and it's got USC and Oregon in it, you know, Washington, which has won national championship. I mean, it's pretty impressive when you look at the names, you know, mm-hmm. and now the names, the bodies in those uniforms are starting to look high caliber again, especially USC. I mean, I keep saying USC is my sleeper this year in terms of maybe Big Ten play, but more than that, maybe, you know, getting into the playoff and doing something, because mm-hmm. as even Lincoln Riley said, you know, they've got depth in the lines on both sides of the football, and that's, boy, when you got that going for you, you can go place. Oh, yep. Yeah, it's really impressive when you just sit back and go, holy smokes, USC yeah. and Oregon and Washington are in the Big Ten in football. That's crazy.
Well, and Indiana's the defending national champions.
Oh, I know, but I was adding on to that.
But what I'm saying, though, is, like, even you mentioned the 80s. None of those teams were contenders for national titles.
Right. Well,
like, you had 97 Michigan. Yeah. You know, 97, you had Michigan, but that's mid-90s, and Penn State was damn good in 94. They probably should have got a share of it.
Oh, yeah.
But we got three straight national titles. You got at least three teams that can win a national title this year, and I'm with you on USC. I think they're a sleeper, too. I really like that USC team.
And you're talking about maybe four. But what else is cool is, in this age, all three teams can make the playoff. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, they can be in there swinging, and that's what's different from the old days too. You know, I mean, one team got to go to the Rose Bowl, and you know, you got all these lesser bowls. Now you can have three teams in the playoff, just like last year. You could have multiple teams in the playoff with a chance to set yourself strut on the main stage as a Big Ten contender. So go ahead. I'm sorry.
What did you make of Kyle Whittingham at Michigan? I'm so fascinated how that goes there. It seems such an odd fit.
I think it's unfortunate for Kyle Whittingham to get this kind of job at the time that it is right. You know, at the time it is right now up in Michigan, what's been going on there. I don't think it's an odd fit. I think he's a tremendous head football coach, but. You know, I may eat these words, but is he an over-the-top guy? I don't know. You know, he did consistently good things at Utah. Couldn't quite grab the brass ring out there and stuff, but now he's got, for the most part, the wherewithal to get it done, and a kind of a no excuses thing. You know, yeah, Michigan is down over in the corner, maybe trying to keep its mouth shut right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
But you know they still got a punch if they want to throw. But I mean, you know, a lot of that's going to be. I mean, who liked Michigan's offense and the way they went about things with Bryce Underwood last year? I mean, they just painted him into a corner in most games and didn't let him play his game. But with them having a more of a running game again this year and stuff, I'm still not sure about their wide receiver core. But they could do things. But you know, Cal Whittingham's got to grow out of his little. Shell too when it comes mm-hmm. to offensive football.
Absolutely. Let's close it with some thoughts on what you gleaned from the Ohio State contingent over there Wednesday, when Ryan and Julian and all those guys talked, Jeremiah, everybody talked over there. What did you make of, did you learn anything that you didn't know about this Buckeye team? Do you view things differently coming out of talking to them on Wednesday than you did going into the conversation?
Yeah, what I glean more than anything is just putting it all together. Change is good, in the sense of Arthur Smith at offensive coordinator, and Cortez at wide receiver coach. I mean, Jeremiah Smith, who you think has all his act together, is talking about, you know, little tidbits he's picked up from Cortez Hankton on. You know, basically just basic stuff. You know, about playing maybe the position a little bit different. You know, with Brian Hartline gone now and stuff, but man, in my opinion, Ryan Day has done a very good job of enhancing his offense with those additions, if you follow my drift, like a little bit of a different way of doing things. And the other thing I picked up, I mean, we were there and we were almost to the end of the Ryan Day part, and I asked Ryan about Legend Bay. See, that's the guy you didn't get to see in the spring game, and
yeah,
you didn't
right.
get to see much of in spring because he got Bay. Dude, everybody's raving about this. This is an added weapon that middle of the season, hell, who knows, he may go off against Ball State, but middle of the season, they're going to have to figure out a way to also get him the ball. You know what I mean?
Yep.
The question is not whether they've got the weapons, it's what weapons are they going to use. I mean, it's when you look at the best receiver in college football, and in my opinion, arguably as good a quarterback as there is in college football, because I do think Julian Sayin has a gleam in his eye when it comes to occasionally running the ball, and then the running back situation, you throw Legend Bay into that. I mean, well, it could really be, because I know the offensive line is going to be better again in the bigger games, because there could be quality across the board there. I just think this offense could really be something. Now, whether they play giddy-up football or not, that helps determine your stats. But I'm just thinking about from a lethal standpoint, it looks pretty good.
Yes, it does, my friend. Always fun to be back talking football on the field instead of all of this stuff off of it. Good stuff as always, buddy. We'll do it again next week.
Hey, maybe they need to send this offense to the Strait of Hormuz, if you know what I'm saying. See you, man.
See you later. Tim May and the Tim May Show with Clay Hall on FanStream Sports. Got to get that in at the end. Second hour of the program coming up next. Doug Laborese at 10:30. What we learned this week. We learned a lot. And Baker Mayfield, does he have a point? We'll get to all of that in hour two. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. Baseball's trade deadline is Monday at 6 p.m. The Reds walked off on the Pirates last night, 3-2 in game one of a four-game set. Both teams are back at Great American Ballpark tonight at 6:10. You can hear that game on The Fan following the Buckeye Show. The Guardians had Thursday off. Cleveland's back home Friday hosting Arizona. They enter the weekend two games back of the White Sox with the top spot in the AL Central. In the minors, the Clippers won some day baseball Thursday. Columbus beat Toledo 9-5. Both teams are back at Huntington Park Friday at 7:05. In college hoops, Ohio State will play a pair of exhibition games in San Juan, Puerto Rico Sunday and Monday. Basketball Buckeyes announced an exhibition with Butler to be played in Columbus Sunday, October 25th. And in college football, Ohio State opens training camp next Thursday. The Fan will be live from the Woody Hayes Athletic Center next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Buckeyes are 36 days out from Ball State Saturday, September 5th. The best Buckeye coverage lives right here on The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Connect with the show on X at 971BFS. Jump in our YouTube chat or just send a raven. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, second hour on a Friday. 20 most interesting coming up in the final hour of the program. The Georgia Bulldogs, former Georgia quarterback Buck Belue, going to join us at 11:30 on that. Doug Laborese in 28 minutes, what he learned from Big Ten Media Days. Speaking of what we learned, let's do that now.
We're not trying to do too much around here, but over the course of 5 days, you might have gleaned some stuff. Bishop and Friends present What We've Learned This Week.
Sponsored by High Bank Distillery Co. Make a reservation today at highbankco.com. Dine, drink, distill at High Bank.
I mean, look, there was a lot this week. We had Big Ten Media Days, and we tackled that and covered it pretty comprehensively all week here on the program. I think the number one jumping out point to me is it appears that the Big Ten is going to flex a little bit, something that we've always kind of wanted them to do. Tony Petitti did not have a big saber-rattling press conference like Greg Sankey had last week down in Tampa. Nothing like that at all. Did not talk about, you know, seceding from the NCAA or any of those type of things that the SEC talked about, but rather a little bit more of a pragmatic approach to the changes that are coming, but also a pretty good flex because the Save College Sports Act has been trying to get to the finish line all week long. The lawmakers have given them all these crazy deadlines, and the Big Ten and the SEC are just like, yeah, we're not really going to listen to your deadlines. We'll get back to you when we want. I don't even know where those things stand now. I saw Amanda Kristovich, who's a great friend of the program, and she's like kind of keeping an eye on it, but it seems like it's going to go through the weekend, Reese. Is that kind of where we're at?
Yeah, so this from Amanda Kristovich. It's Friday, and I'm told involved parties in Congress will continue to engage in conversations over the Protect College Sports Act over the weekend in the hopes there will be time to get the vote going next week. Senator Schmidt, who's one of the sponsors of the bill, spoke with SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey after the league's 4 o'clock call yesterday. Talks are continuing. The Senate will be in session until Friday, so there's an extra day of wiggle room.
Yeah, I think anything that limits what the SEC and the Big Ten is capable of doing from a financial standpoint is going to be looked upon negatively by the senators and the congressmen and women in those constituencies. Like, if you're representing the state of Ohio and you're going to co-sign a bill that's going to limit what Ohio State can do in football, good luck getting reelected. I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. Same thing in Alabama, same thing in Georgia, same thing in Texas. Like, Senator Cruz is working this. To me, it feels like from a Big 12 perspective that he's working with Texas Tech pretty hard on this. When he thinks about the cap, about 19 teams, when you talk about, you know, you can't poach a team for another league unless they sit independent for 5 years. When you talk about like pooling revenue, why would the SEC and the Big Ten pool revenue? Why would they share with the Big 12 and the ACC? There's just nothing to behoove them to do that. I mean, that is a professional sports model. But professional sports leagues, when they were founded, were all kind of on equal footing. These operations are not on equal footing in any way, shape, or form. The brands that are in these leagues at the top are worth significantly more than the brands that are in the Big 12 and the ACC as it stands right now. And so to ask them to take less, to me, as soon as you put that in a bill, to say to limit what Ohio State can spend on a roster, to make it even so that they can spend the same amount of the roster as Cincinnati, like, that's not going to land. That's not going to land at all. So I've said this the whole time. I just see no scenario where this gets done unless there are major concessions to this bill that take away some of those restrictions that would be on the Big Ten and the SEC.
Let's also not rush this. If we're going to do this, let's take the time it takes to do it right. Mm-hmm. Let's say, oh, we got to get this in before they break here in a week. Like, well, no, hold on. Because rushing things has never helped anybody or anything. So let's just, if we're working on this, we've gone through enough seasons, we can go through one more. Let's pump the brakes a little bit. And if we are making progress on something like this, let's continue to make progress on it.
Yeah, I think the one thing that they're contending with, if you do the reading on it, is the Oval Office wants something done on this because they want it before the midterms to say we saved college sports. So that's the other thing that's really going on here that you're trying to combat. And the reality is the midterms are, this isn't a political statement at all, it's just obvious, like the midterms are going to be defined by those battleground states. And the battleground states are the ones where the SEC and the Big Ten call home. I mean, you're talking about Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Georgia, the Carolinas. Like, these are massive, Texas. These are massive states that have huge, huge implications in November. And you just got to be a little careful there because you do not want to upset those constituencies, limiting what those beloved programs can do financially for themselves. So anything that tries to limit that, I think, is going to get shot down by the Big Ten and the SEC.
If this doesn't go to the floor to vote and they go on break, it's dead.
Yeah. This one's dead, like, for sure. There will be another one, I'm sure, at some point. But I do wonder if it's some... To me, I just think the most logical place we're going to end up with this is kind of what we've all talked about for, you know, many, many years now, and that is kind of breaking off football from everything else. And truly doing a almost like a super league of football. I think that's probably the one where, you know, these 40 to 60 schools, whatever that number is, find the sweet spot. They're going to operate in this different world. And then you can come up with your own financial rules and regulations, contracts that you want to play with and play under. That's probably where it ends up inevitably. I think any sort of federal legislation is going to be really difficult to get through because of what we just said. At Big Ten Media Days this week, the other thing I think that you learned, and we talked about it off the top of the show, is it's a damn fine league. It's a damn fine league. You think about the quality that a program like Illinois currently occupies. You think about even Luke Fickell, He kind of was talking this week at Big Ten Media Days, and I'm not bullish on the Badgers at all, but it did seem like he was finally given some resources that he needed to win at Wisconsin. Now he's got to go win. I think Matt Campbell's going to have a hell of a first year at Penn State because of all of the Iowa State guys he brought over, and because of that schedule is so, so Charmin soft. Felt like Lincoln Riley, a little bit of a cat ate the canary. I know you're down on them, Bake, typically, but they look like they kind of have it all rolling heading into year three in the Big Ten. So I think USC could be a very interesting team. I think Washington could be a very interesting team. You're always going to have your Rutgers. You're always going to have your Purdue. You're always going to have like your bottom feeders. But the league itself is as strong as it's ever been, and it's the most national championship worthy teams we've ever had in this league. When you think of a legit three, and there could be four and five knocking on the door. This may be a five. I mean, it's definitely, to me, it's a four playoff team league for sure. And it might end up being a five. We'll see by the time all is said and done. But I think the Big Ten is operating from just a tremendous position of strength. And finally, and Tony Petitti didn't saber rattle. Nothing like that. But he definitely was a little more chesty and sure than we've ever heard him. And we don't hear from him often. It did feel a little bit like, I got the keys to the kingdom now, kids, and we're gonna make sure this ship lands. He was even a little bit more malleable with the 2014 playoff. Obviously, they still won it, but he was a little bit more malleable with that than he was a year ago. So, to me, I think the Big Ten is operating from a tremendous position of strength. And for the first time, really, maybe ever, certainly in my 20-some years covering the league, they're kind of open to talking about it a little bit, which is pretty cool.
Also, during that Cignetti statement that we aired, he didn't mention the Southeastern Conference. I don't know if SEC, if those three letters, or if Southeastern Conference came out of anybody's mouth.
No.
When it came talking about comparing conferences. Now, I'm sure with conversations about playoff expansion, I'm sure, you know, conversations with the Protect College Sports Act, or what did Paul call it earlier this week, the Save the World Act? Because it's what it does kind of feel like, at least in our, you know, our little silo, where it's like, we got to protect college sports, because if there's no college sports, then shut it all off and we could go home. But it was very stark, the contrast in conversations from the Big Ten and the SEC. And they had 2 weeks ago in Tampa, it was anger, it was frustration. And from the Big Ten this week, it was optimism and an understanding of there's still a lot of work to do to get everybody in the healthiest spot. And by everybody in the healthiest spot, I mean the teams, the 18 teams that are in this Big Ten and the potential for more.
Mm-hmm.
The Big Ten is in a great spot. Those three trophies that were next to Tony Petitti from last season and in the last three college national football championship trophies say so. And it was nice to see the Big Ten toot its own horn.
Yeah.
A little bit. Bo, you said something there that really stood out to me, where you said this is a four playoff team league, maybe even five.
Mm-hmm.
And I just can't get there for this season for the Big Ten. Now, you mentioned I've got to see USC do it. I know there's a lot of hype. Yeah. I've got to see it. Who are the fourth and fifth teams? Because, well, I feel like Indiana, Oregon, and Ohio State are almost locks.
They're locks. If you look at the Penn State schedule, how are they not at worst 10-2? At worst. I don't see how they're not. You have the opportunity for surprise, and then I think USC is right there waiting. And by the way, I think Jed Fish can coach at Washington, and he's got Damon Williams back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I haven't looked at their schedule, but I'd be shocked if they aren't a team of consequence this year. And so the question is, can you get four teams to 10-2 minimum? My thinking is that they probably will. I have a hard time, and I don't know that I don't know if we'll ever know if Penn State's very good. We don't play them. So I don't know if we'll know.
Play anybody.
We know they're unrivaled.
No. We know they're unrivaled. Know what do they have? They only have Oregon this year, right?
Yeah, I think so.
That's dangerous.
It's just very sad.
Yeah, so like I don't think they play Michigan this year either. Maybe they play Michigan, I'm not sure. But we'll do Penn State next week with Rich Scarcella, I believe, on Tuesday. But like, the schedule is so navigable. As long as they don't get run when they play Oregon.
It's Michigan and Oregon. Oh, they got SC on the slate.
Okay. Okay. So, but even if they lose to Oregon and USC close, as long as they don't get run, they're going to be favored in every other game they play. And that's 10-2, and you're Penn State. So I don't think you're going to leave Tennessee, Penn State out. So, and then watch out. I like USC. I know you need to see it, but I do like that USC team. I think they got a nice group coming back. We'll go around the NFL coming up next. Doug LaMaurice coming up in 17 minutes. He was over at Big Ten Media Days. You have that to look forward to, which is nice. But coming up next, day two at Browns camp. It was a Shadur day, and a former Browns quarterback made some headlines yesterday as well. We'll get to all of that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
I replay this summer takes you back to some of the greatest comebacks in Ohio State football history.
Scott McMullen leads the Buckeyes past Penn State in a 2003 classic.
Hear Buckeye Replay this Saturday at 1 p.m. on The Fan.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Partly sunny skies for us today. It's filtered cloud cover works in from the west. Highs reach the mid to upper 80s. Overnight, increasing clouds, lows in the upper 60s. We'll top out pretty close to 80 on Saturday. More clouds and sunshine. Spotty showers and thunderstorms, especially as the day goes on. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. Our top men are working on everything except this show.
We have top men working on it right now.
Who? Top men.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Indeed you are, and we are proudly sponsored and brought to you by our great friends at Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for nearly eight decades. NFL talk. Choose your adventure. Browns quarterbacks day two or Baker Mayfield?
Let's go Baker Mayfield.
All right, let's have fun. Go ahead.
So yesterday at Bucks camp, talking about how he's going to play out the year without a contract extension, feeling a little disrespected. You want to hear from him?
Yep. Been pretty upfront and honest about my feelings about Tampa. It being home for now, our family, we're raising kids here. We love it here. I wanted the deal done and set the deadline and told them it was going to be all ball after that. And I did mean that. And I don't know if they thought I was just going to take some of the offers that they gave, but I'm at the point of my career and understanding what I've brought to this franchise. One, I'm very, very thankful for the chance they gave me. Do not get me wrong on that. But I've also I really know what I've brought to this franchise, leadership-wise, and even play-wise. It's been some of the best years of my career, and I think it's only going to trend upwards, just being comfortable and feeling that. So disappointing in that regard to not have, you know, to feel disrespected a little bit.
Thing or not a thing.
So the beat writer for the Tampa Bay, for the Bucks, for the Tampa Bay, Tampa Tribune, St. Pete Times, I think it's all together now. It used to be two separate newspapers. Now it's all together. They he said that they offered him 2 years just short of 50. So that would be, you know, 298. That would put him, if you look at the quarterback paid list, there aren't a whole lot of guys in the 40s is the reality. Deshaun's still in the 40s from the $230 million deal from a couple years ago. And then Danny Dimes is in the 40s at 44. But then like Sam Darnold's at 33, Baker's at 33 in terms of average per year. I think the Tampa Bay Bucks are in a very, very interesting spot. What would you do if you were them? Because their roster is kind of headed for one that looks like it's kind of needs to be turned over a little bit. No Mike Evans anymore. He's in San Francisco with the 49ers. They're not Super Bowl contenders. They can kind of hang in the NFC South. But I mean, honestly, it's very similar to the spot that the Browns are in with him. Like, is he a quarterback good enough for you to win a Super Bowl with? If that is your, or so it's two parts. Is he good enough? And this is where the Browns were when they made the move to go with Deshaun. Because they thought that he was at best always going to be at best the third best quarterback in their own division behind Joe and Lamar. So that's part of the reason why they made that deal at the time that they did it and moved off of Baker. So if you're Tampa Bay, are you in a Super Bowl window? No. Do you still want to win the division? Is that important to you? Or do you want to transition to a younger roster and maybe get into a quarterback situation going forward? Who knows? So I think it's really up to Tampa to decide, like, what do they want to be? he's playing the disrespect card. He's used to this. He does this very, very well. As long as he has the support of the room, he will play well with the disrespect card. If he ever loses the room like he did up in Cleveland, then it all goes to hell. And that's why I've said for years, like, he's the best front runner in sports. It's not necessarily a slight, but when things are going his way, he's great. When it starts to turn, it's tough. And it turned twice in Cleveland. It turned once in the Freddie Kitchens year, and he turned another time negatively in his last year there after Odell's dad put out that video, and he kind of lost the room with all of that. So those were the two instances where we saw the negative side of it. How does he manage all that in Tampa? I don't know. I would not. Would you guys give him 4 years, $200 million?
No.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
I would see what you get for Vita Vey as well, and then maybe deal Vey first, their defensive tackle that wants out. And then let Baker play this year and see how it looks. See if there's, because I don't, and I guess the conversation is, what if he plays well enough to where you have to give him something, you have to give him north of 50? And I don't see that being the case. So if you're able to pull something for Vey and then put yourself in a position where maybe you could be available for one of the quarterbacks in 27, I think that's a better spot than kind of, it's an albatross. It would be an albatross of a contract, but what I'm looking for is like the ankle weight or an anchor that would sink you for the next five seasons if you were to give him something.
This is such a conundrum because you have a guy like Brock Purdy that's making $53 million a year. Tua Tagovailoa at one point signed a $55 million a year.
That would be the situation contract. I think Tampa would find themselves in if they did the deal that Baker wants.
That's also the Kyler deal, too.
Yes. Yeah,
so and the Russell Wilson deal in Seattle. Like, that was like, oh, my God, what have we done?
So these guys are signing these deals, and it's ridiculous. They're signing, and I understand why the teams do it, because if you don't have a quarterback, you're not getting there. But it's the fear of not having one. And there, I feel like there's only a handful at the top that deserve this and really make the difference.
Yeah.
Like, you're better off taking maybe a little lesser quarterback than Baker Mayfield and building a team around him and winning that way. Now, I don't know if you're going to win the Super Bowl, though, that way, but I think your chances of being relevant are better than that. But then you look at Sam Darnold, who just won the Super Bowl, and he's making 33 and a half. So there's the team comp. Like, hey, this guy just won a Super Bowl. It's so hard. Like, I like Baker Mayfield. I think he is a good, average, middle-of-the-road starting quarterback. I think the highs and lows with him sometimes can be a little much, and that's why teams get tired of it. At his peak, he's top 10.
He is.
But at his worst, he's in the bottom third.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so hard. I would not. And I love Baker Mayfield.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what happened with him in Cleveland was, I personally feel it was more Cleveland than it was Baker. Maybe that's not the case, and I know you were there for all of it, Bo, but
yeah.
I would not give him $50 million a year.
Yeah, I mean, just so you're on the same page, like it was undone by Odell's dad's tweet. And then that was it.
Who gave him iMovie?
Yeah, and Odell's, the team... And I'm not talking about front office. I'm talking about the team sided with Odell. And so once that happened, it was done. There was no coming back from it. Then he started not trusting people. He gets really rabbit ears. He hears everything. He perceives things the way he wants to perceive it. He would call out coaches. And then, I mean, it was a real mess. I mean, he was a mess at the end, and it was mostly on him. Maybe Kevin could have done some things a little bit different, but mostly it was on him and his play and his behavior. I mean, I lived it. I saw it. So, that was part of it. I don't know what they do. I really don't. I'll tell you, I was trying to think of, like, where could he land? Like, if they say, you know what, we're going to pivot, we're going to go young, try to draft a quarterback and try to build this thing with Emeka and some of these young guys, like the spot that would, because he'll end up being like in, like what Darnold was a couple years ago, or like what Kyler is. Like, is there a spot that's got weapons that he can paratroop in and have success? The first one I thought of was Pittsburgh. They get done with Rodgers. They don't ever want to rebuild. They could paratroop him in there. He would play that up as big as possible every time he played against Cleveland. And they kind of have some weapons, big weapons. He likes big receivers. Well, they got him. So That's the first thing I thought of is could he end up there?
The other place I thought was Arizona.
It feels like they're going to draft one or two, though, right?
It does, and they'll probably go that way. But an underdog franchise, Baker loves that underdog mentality. You got Marv, you got McBride, you got Jeremiah Love. That Arizona would make sense for him, too, I believe.
Yeah, even Houston, if CJ, because he doesn't have an extension. Like, if they don't give, if CJ's, if they're like, we've seen enough of CJ, maybe Houston is a spot, and he goes back to Texas. So there's some possibilities there. A couple of things on day two of Browns camp. So yesterday was a Shador with the ones, Deshaun with the twos. Deshaun was much better in day two than he was in day one. The one thing with Shador that he's just got to get better at is he really struggles, like, just with the procedure. Like, getting, there were several, like, they had to blow the whistle because wasn't to the line of scrimmage in the time for the play clock. So they were running two fields simultaneously, and the one Watson was on was consistently at least one play ahead, and sometimes two plays ahead, just because they were getting out of the huddle with some operational speed to them. I think the moral of the story is whoever goes against the first team defense is going to have a struggle of a day. Now, Shador made some really good throws as it went along, hit Denzel Boston on a crosser that was nice, and he got more comfortable as it went along, but there wasn't a whole lot offensively going against those ones. I will say this, very limited reps, Dylan Gabriel looks really good. Not that he's going to get thrust into this thing, but he looked really good from an operational standpoint, from an accuracy standpoint, all of it. So it's obviously between those two, and I think Todd's going to have some real decisions to make at the how that all goes.
I don't know if that makes me want to laugh or cry.
Well, you can do both.
It's just what happened, man. You know, it's just where it is. So we'll see what happens on day three. Today they will have crowd out there, so that adds a little bit of juice to it. It'll go back to being a Deshaun day. I will say this. Mike Hall looks amazing. Amazing. He looks like a beast. He is in tremendous shape, wreaking incredible havoc in the middle of that defensive line. So that is something for Buckeye fans to pay attention to because he looks really good up there in camp. Doug LaMaurice in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURN.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
10 feet tall and bulletproof isn't just a saying, it's a way of life. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, time down on the Brian Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Conversation with our good buddy Doug LaMaurice, the Bill and Doug Show on YouTube, billanddougshow.com. Were you like a proud papa over at the Capone Hilton, as I'm calling it this week? It's kind of everything you've ever wanted. Like, you got the three national titles, you've got like maybe four national championship contenders, three for sure. You got kind of Petiti was a little chesty, Cignetti really chesty, hell, even Bielema chesty. Like, this is kind of everything you've always wanted, buddy.
I'm verklempt, Bo. This is what it's about. It felt like, and we talked about this on our show yesterday, like they've walked the walk and now they talk the talk, yeah. Right? And some people are like, yeah, does the talking matter? And I don't know. I think you need to speak to your fans. I think you need to get your people excited. I think you need to stand up for your people. But as long as there's a 13 people sitting in a room making decisions about who gets to play for the national championship, I'm going to believe that talking matters at least a little bit. So all of it. And I kind of like, I grabbed Petiti for just a couple minutes off to the side and was sort of like, you know, like, this is it, right? And like, he's, I don't know if, you know, there's been some changes a little bit in the communication office. I think some people think that like the Big Ten's leaning in a little bit more. But they did, you know, they had the spring meetings a couple months ago. Like, I think they're just getting it. And I thought the one thing that really mattered, he brought up the depth conversation. And I've been bringing up the depth conversation for a while. It's the next frontier. Right. And so that idea, that's the fight for the fourth playoff spot. That's the fight to say, you know, why wasn't USC talked about in the same breath as Texas last year when they both had three losses? Right. So I think it's just nice to hear, but I also think it's strategic. And so I'm in, baby.
Me too, buddy. I said this. I'm curious where you land on this. You went to Northwestern, obviously, Big Ten school. You've covered the league now for 20 years, 20 plus years. I was trying to think. I think this is the best spot the Big Ten's ever been in the modern era. Like, you go back 50 years, like, I suppose there were times like before a segregated South and all of that type of stuff in the 50s, for it maybe. But in terms of like from the 70s on, the mid 60s on, is this the best the Big Ten's ever been? And I think the answer is probably yes.
Yeah, and there was a time when they held their own, right? So, like,
yeah,
that before the SEC took over, it was just split. It was regional, right? And, mm-hmm. like, Ohio State could be good, and Alabama could be good, and Nebraska could be good, and Washington could be good, and all of that. But I think, you know, with the consolidation, I agree. I think it's probably no doubt about it, and it really is, like, you can feel the impact of the West Coast schools right now, mm-hmm. right? And just like the fun of it, because there's who makes it, but it's just the fun. Are there going to be great games? We are talking about the quarterbacks in this league right now. You know, that it's just like, I think the seventh best team in the Big Ten is interesting and fun to watch. I think the ninth best team in the Big Ten is interesting and fun to watch. That just hasn't always been the case. And Oregon's really good. USC has a real shot this year. Washington mm-hmm. still could win 9 or 10 games, and UCLA might have a pulse if Bob Chesney, the, you know, Cignetti Jr., like that. You feel that impact. And then again, you know, new coaches at Penn State, Michigan, some energy around that. And the Buckeyes are the Buckeyes. Like, mm-hmm. it's a fun place to talk ball.
It is.
You know, which is the bottom line. This is why people listen to your show, why they listen to my show. Like, that's the fun part of this. And you don't have to, like, trick yourself into thinking that there's good teams and good players in this league.
No, you can look at an Ohio State schedule. It's more robust. Everybody knows it. You look at the Ohio State schedule this year and you go, okay, that's a little tricky. That's a tricky stretch.
Yeah.
There's okay. Can you get out? Like, it seems like you talk to, I talk to listeners all the time, and it to me, it feels like people around here are like, yeah, 10-2. Like, that's okay. And that seems very real. That's everything that was kind of a topic this week, was that the depth in the middle, you're right. The ninth team is good. The 19th or the 18th or whatever, the bottom, everyone's going to have a bottom. But I think the middle, I mean, like, even Bielema, as chesty as he is, Illinois is pretty decent this year. He's a pretty good squad. Like, I'm not sure that, I'm curious to see what happens with Fitz at Michigan State. So, like,
sure.
Northwestern's opening a new football stadium that looks incredible. Sure. Like, there's all of these things that are happening. So it's just a very good time. What did you make of Whittingham and Campbell specifically and their approaches to those two jobs?
Yeah, Campbell just like pretty, almost like Ferentz a little bit. Like, it's just not, just like rock solid. You know, there's, you know, reports now that he took his players out to like a camp, you know, and like had some camp bonding, just like kind of an old school mm-hmm. Kind of guy. But again, you know, everything's a reaction to the thing before it. Just like with what Franklin was, and Franklin did a lot of good things, but couldn't get over the top and sort of, you know, like sometimes would talk and it's like, what is it? I think that's okay. Like, he's not going to light it up at Big Ten Media Days. And mm-hmm. then just across the board at Michigan, it's sort of what we all thought, but it was them saying it. It's other people saying it. Just competence. Just like, again, like, what if Michigan's competent? And that's just what they needed to reset. You know, he's talking about their weight room stuff wasn't in the right place. And, you know, Bryce Underwood wasn't coached very well last year. And just like all that kind of stuff that they just needed to clear the decks and focus on football. And I think Whittingham's going to be able to do that. And then it's like, okay, well, what if Bryce Underwood is actually pretty good and that kind of thing? Mm-hmm. But you know what's nice? They don't have to be great,
no.
right? You have Ohio State, Indiana, and Oregon kind of at the tier above them right now. And so Michigan and Penn State, like, they have good players. They're going to be competitive. But, like, if they aren't in the playoff mix, it's not like the Big Ten stinks, right? So I think that's good for the league, too. But also, then, like, we've seen them be good before. What if they're good?
Yeah.
So now we're talking about now, and what if USC's good? Now we're going like six deep on real top tier type programs. I it's just really good.
It is, and I think the point you made there at the end was exactly going to be the follow up, which is the Big Ten doesn't need them to be. For years, right. They needed Penn State and Michigan to be great in order for the league. They don't need it anymore. Oregon is great. Indiana is great. I'm with you on USC. So, they don't need it. They could kind of wade into this thing. And for Penn State and James and Matt Campbell, that schedule is going to allow for them to. You got a chance to talk to the Buckeyes a lot as well. What did you learn in terms of talking to those guys, Coach Day? What was kind of your feeling coming out of that as they start camp next week?
So I'm going to write about this on our website today. We know it, but the chasing greatness aspect of Jeremiah Smith, I think it's even more exciting than we realize. And just like an appreciation on behalf of the fans that this guy already is a millionaire many times over, is going to be a millionaire even many more times over, is going to set every receiving record in the book, has been a national champion, has been an All-American. And he could have showed up at something like this and like been over it, been I'm ready for the NFL. Why do I have to sit here and talk to these people, right? Mm-hmm. And was completely not that. Was engaging, was funny, was humble, but also like not afraid to talk about his goals, you know, was like honest, had a just like a fun personality. And this is a superstar. You don't want to get hyperbolic because there's great players all the time at Ohio State. He's as talented as anybody ever at this place. And like, he's into it. Like, he's here for it. He could have left, but he's not like he's locked in on this, and it's going to be what happens on the field matters more, but like off the field talk, like he's engaged. And for Jeremiah Smith to be as talented as he is, and also like he said, he's going to be sad. He's sad a little bit that this is his last year, right? Like, he wants to be here. He wants to do this like with the fans. And everybody knows it. But I would almost tell Ohio State fans, like, have a little notebook. Put it in your notes app on your phone when Jeremiah Smith does stuff this year. Because I think 50 years from now, people in your family are going to be asking you about what was Jeremiah Smith like his last year in Columbus. And I think you're going to want to remember it.
Doug, I said this, I think, Wednesday, and it dovetails into what you're talking about right here. I said, this is the first guy in a long time that before he starts what will be his final season here, you can say, if he does certain things, he might be the best to ever play here. He doesn't have to do all of it, but like, he's going to be the all-time leading receiver. If he wins the Heisman, now you're talking about three-time consensus All-American, national champion, Heisman winner. Like, that trumps O'Pace. If he does that, like, it's just heady stuff.
And it's just fun. And again, like, it's not a burden. It's not pressure. Because he could go, you know, sit in the park and play checkers for all season, the whole season, and he'd be an all-time Buckeye legend. He doesn't have to prove anything to anybody. It's all opportunity. It's all fun. It's all legacy, right? There's not a downside to it, right? And so, you know it when you see it, right?
Just
certain guys are different. And when Greg Oden was here, and Greg Oden White played whatever it was, 20 games as a Buckeye, and it's just like, you're not going to see this again. You're not going to see this. Like, this is rare. Please take this in. And this is so different because it's going to be 3 years instead of one. It's football, not basketball, but it's just, you don't see it. And I think he appreciates it. I think fans obviously appreciate it, but it's like everybody's going to get to do it together. And he's not going to be stiff-arming people and pushing them away. It's like he's going to let people ride with him on a really memorable, fun football experience, and that's the whole point of all this.
Look forward to reading it, my friend. Thanks for your time, as always.
Thanks, brother. I'll see you.
All right, there he goes. Doug LaMaurice, the Bill and Doug Show on YouTube and BillandDougShow.com. And I look forward to reading Doug's piece on Jeremiah and the history that is on the table for him. We get you thing or not a thing up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Feel that? The season is getting closer. Buckeye football comes your way in 36 days. Every game, every season. Proud to be your flagship home for Ohio State football. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
The perfect show for quarter zips and khaki shorts. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little thing or not a thing on a Friday. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
Since the NFL draft, goofballs like us have been harping on the Bengals and their strength, or their roster strength on paper. Mm-hmm. A question was posed to Ja'Marr Chase earlier this week at Bengals camp.
Is this the best Bengals team you've been on?
Ask me at the end of the year. Yeah. Can't say that now.
Thing or not a thing?
I love Ja'Marr Chase. I just love him. Can you imagine how fun it'd be to have that guy on your team? Like Bengals fans out there? You got Joe Burrow and you got that dog. Fighting people on day one. Says we can't be fighting. We got to set a tone every day. Like that. Sign me up. I think it is. I think it's the best Bengals. I think it's the most talented Bengals roster ever. I think it's great news on Ja'Marr Stewart, by the way, that he's not done for the year. I thought he'd be done for the year after looking at the video. That's awesome. So, I think it is the best Bengals team on paper. I love his answer to it. I loved his press conference. Like, you're lucky to have him. He's a really cool player.
Bo, I'm with you where I do think this is the most talented Bengals roster that he's played on. Now, it's not going to be the best Bengals team he's ever played on if they don't make it to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Because he was on a team that made it to the Super Bowl, and I love his answer. Like, hey, we'll see. You know, time will tell. And I think it's the best value bet on the board this year for the NFL is the Bengals. Mm-hmm. I think they've done a lot of work on that defense and added to it and made it a lot better. Demetrius Knight, the guy they drafted last year out of Texas A&M, sounds like he was making a awesome interception of Joe Burrow yesterday and then joking with him today like, I know he's going to come back at me, and going and dapping him up before practice. There just seems to be a lot of good vibes around this Bengals team right now.
Yep.
In January, Adam Thielen announced his retirement from professional football. He was acquired by the Steelers last December, played just a month in the Steel City. He was on NFL Live Wednesday and talked about what it was like playing for Aaron Rodgers.
Better know those hand signals, because if you mess up a hand signal, you will not get the ball for a week and maybe longer. If you're
a rookie,
you're not on the field again.
Wait, did that ever happen to you?
I promise you, I've never been more stressed in my life than practices with Aaron Rodgers.
Like, and we're talking hand signals that can be as little nuanced as possible, and you can get multiple in the course of 2 or 3 seconds. Yes,
I am in the game. And I don't know what the defense is doing because I have to have my eyes on Aaron the entire time. Because he can throw down a hand signal at any second right before he says set hook.
But you're trusting that he knows what the defense is doing.
And he does.
Right?
And he does.
Yeah.
The thing about Aaron is he isn't going to go through a progression.
Thing or not a thing.
Last line was interesting. He's not going to go through a progression. So basically he's predetermining where to throw it at snap, which I guess if you're good enough and you have a strong enough arm, you can do that. But that's interesting to me. I don't know if he meant that. That was just kind of a throw-in line at the end. I think Adam Thielen was really good on television, and I'm thinking he's got a pretty bright future in that if that's what he wants to do, and it seems like he does if he's on NFL Live. Pretty amazing that you still would have that type of nervousness for somebody who's as accomplished as Thielen is playing with Rodgers, that Rodgers still has that aura to him.
I think it is a thing, and it's also why the greats are great.
Mm-hmm.
They all have those nuances, and they want everybody to be in lockstep and full attention at all times. And, hey, trust me, I know that I'm going to put you in the right spot. I know what this defense is doing. You just pay attention to me, and I'll take care of the rest.
Yep.
In an interview last week, UNLV men's basketball coach Josh Pastner said the team is seeking an owner to boost the program's finances. He attempted to clear up those comments. Quote, I have told people who buys the NBA teams, buy the college team. You can be the owner of the UNLV Running Rebels men's basketball team. So that was that was what he told a Las Vegas television station last week, and it's a lot less expensive. He went on to say he's seeking a backer to invest $10 to $12 million in the program, not an actual owner. Quote, if you have a $12 million check, you can compete against Kentucky, Duke, Arizona, UCLA for any player you want. Right now, if another school offers someone $1 million and our budget only allows $100,000, it doesn't matter how much the kid likes me. So he posted a statement. The Running Rebels are not for sale. My reference to an owner was meant to highlight the level of resources, sponsorships, and overall support needed to compete in today's evolving college athletics landscape. Not to suggest anyone could own the program, thing or not a thing.
Why did he walk this back? I mean, owner, benefactor, whatever you want to call it, it's all the same. I mean, Cody Campbell owns Texas Tech football, right?
His
I mean,
name's like, on the field.
Who cares? Like, why would you? I don't understand why he's walking this back. It's actually pretty smart what he did. Like, if they have a booster, and I have no idea about UNLV's finances or if they've got guys, I'm assuming they do. They have to have some people who have flourished in Las Vegas with the incredible boom that's happened there over the last 30 years that they're UNLV supporters or boosters. I mean, that was back in the Tark era. Like, he's right. Get me $15 million a year on this roster, and we're going to win a lot of basketball games. I don't understand why he's walking it back.
I think it's the word owner is what gets people on this. Okay. And also, and it's something that I guess has been around for a while in college sports and even more so now. Like, careful what you wish for, because that guy that's donating $12 million and you don't win, he may call for your job. And he may just go to your athletic director and say, hey, I gave this money, he didn't win, I want someone new.
Absolutely.
So be very careful with dropping those words around, I guess.
We've all seen blue chips. That's happy. And the booster happy in blue chips. Same thing.
So a one-of-one Shohei Ohtani dual gold Logo Man autograph card has surfaced in Boca Raton, Florida. It was pulled from a hobby box of Topps chrome baseball cards by a collector at his local shop, Boca Sports Cards. So that double gold logo patch with an autograph from Shohei Ohtani just sold for $11 million. Mm-hmm. That's the third highest price ever for a sports card. Thing or not a thing?
Well, it's a massive thing. I mean, that's how this... So basically what they've done is if you're not into this yet, or you have kids who got into this, like, they basically are just manufacturing scarcity is what they're doing. And then they're charging exponentially more for like a box of cards or a pack of cards. Like, it's like $100 for a box of cards, because you can get an $11 million card. Now, it's playing the lottery. It's one in a million, better, probably even worse than that, but it's also, there's a chance. So you're saying there's a chance. There were a couple of guys in our town that pulled $1.5 million Ohtani card like 2 years ago. So that's the one that they're putting them on, is that, and that's caused like 80 of my buddies to spend a lot of money on baseball cards in the last 2 years. Like, fellas, if it happened once in town, it's probably not happening twice.
It's crazy to me that people would buy a card for this much. And I guess it is the old, it's worth what somebody's willing to pay for it. I don't know what your return on investment is going to be with this in the future. It's crazy how much baseball cards and things like this memorabilia has come back, because baseball cards were just about dead.
They were dead.
And then COVID happened and they made this massive resurgence. Mm-hmm. I remember buddies of mine buying boxes of Upper Deck cards in 19, was it 89? Was that Ken Griffey Jr.'s rookie year?
Yep, the Griffey rookie.
Just because, and they never opened them. To this day, I don't know if they've opened those boxes of cards or not, but they just bought them looking for Ken Griffey Jr. rookie cards.
Well, sadly, they're not worth anything. Like, the Griffey Jr. rookie card's worth about now what it was then. Like, $60. Like, unfortunately, like, everybody did that. Now, they're just manufacturing scarcity, which, it's fun, but it's pretty damn pricey when you're talking about, like, $100 for a box of cards, and that's kind of where you're at now. Final hour of the program coming up next. We have the Georgia Bulldogs kicking off and closing out SEC week. The Dogs, former legendary Georgia quarterback Buck Belue, going to join us at 11:30. Bishop and Friends right here.
Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service, because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning. I'm Eric Reeser. 36 days out from Ohio State and Ball State, Buckeyes host the Cardinals Saturday, September 5th. OSU will begin training camp next Thursday and will open the practices to fans Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. The Fan will be at the Woody Hayes Athletic Center with coverage all next week. The basketball Buckeyes are in Puerto Rico for a pair of exhibition games Sunday and Monday in San Juan. Ohio State announced an exhibition with Butler to be played in Columbus Sunday, October 25th. In baseball, the trade deadline is Monday at 6. The Guardians had Thursday off. Cleveland's back home Friday hosting Arizona. In Cincinnati last night, the Reds walked off on the Pirates 3-2. Both teams are back at Great American tonight at 6:10. Hear that game on The Fan following the Buckeyes show. In the minors, the Clippers won some day baseball Thursday, beating Toledo 9-5. Both teams back at Huntington Park Friday at 7:05. This update is sponsored by United Dairy Farmers. Peach ice cream is back at UDF. Right now, get two large cartons of UDF peach ice cream for just $10.
The best facial hair on the air. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, final hour of the week. 20 Most Interesting, the final SEC program of 20 Most Interesting. Hit it, fellas.
We'll expand conferences. We'll expand the playoffs. But we'll never, ever expand our interests. Bishop and Friends present the 20 Most Interesting Programs.
And we land on the Georgia Dogs. Were you guys aware? Well, before we get to that, let's set the table. Six returning starters on offense, including quarterback Gunnar Stockton, running back Nate Frazier, some offensive linemen in the mix as well. Should be pretty sturdy up there. The Dogs defense, which is always sturdy under Kirby Smart, ought to be especially so this year. Eight returners on defense starting. In terms of the transfer window, they were pretty kind of Ohio State-y in it. They had needs. They went and filled those needs. They did a pretty good job there. They went 12-2 last year. They lost to Ole Miss in the college football playoff quarterfinals, 39-34. Their recruiting class ranking was ninth. That's really low for them. Normally they are 1, 2, or 3, but this is a reflection of where we are in the sport. The transfer class ranking was 16th, combined net ranking of ninth. Kirby Smart is entering his 11th season in Athens. He is a robust 117-21 in that time. That's like a Ryan Day Urban type run that he's had there. He's got the two national champions, 846 win percentage since he has been there. His run at Georgia he doesn't have the national titles that Saban does, but it's right there. When I was down there, everybody said about Georgia, that's the sleeping giant. Like, why can't Georgia be at the time what Florida was? Why can't Georgia be what Alabama was? Their high school football was better than Alabama's. Their high school football is better than LSU, than Louisiana. It's not quite Florida, but it's close. And all those kids grow up dreaming to be Dogs. And Kirby was the first one to really get it locked in since Vince Dooley in the 80s. He's won two national titles, four SEC championships, three-time SEC Coach of the Year. You guys have this from Brad Crawford in the prep. It's unbelievable. He's 10-0 against Kentucky, 10-1 against Auburn, 9-1 against Tennessee, 8-0 against Missouri, 8-1 against Georgia Tech, 8-2 against Florida, 7-1 against South Carolina, 6-1 against Vandy, 5-0 Mississippi State, 3-1 Texas, 2-1 Notre Dame, 2-0 Arkansas, 1-0 against Oklahoma, A&M, and Ohio State, 2-7 against Bama. For whatever reason, Saban always had his number. Saban is no longer there, of course. 2-3 against Ole Miss, and 1-2 against LSU. So when you look at this Georgia schedule, and I just took a long look at it in the break, they're in the playoff. They're in the playoff, and I'd be shocked if they didn't win the SEC and have a bye. Their schedule this year, and remember, when the SEC added Texas and Oklahoma, they really leaned on Georgia in a big way. They really did. They made them play the hits, and their schedules were brutal those first couple of years. This is a massive reprieve. In the non-conference, they've got Georgia Tech. It's a rivalry game. They got to play that at the end, and then they added Tennessee State, Western Kentucky, two bye weeks. Their SEC schedule at Arkansas, Oklahoma at home, okay, it's a little tricky. Vandy at home, at Bama, Auburn, Florida in the cocktail party, at Ole Miss, Missouri, and at South Carolina. No Texas, no LSU on the schedule. No Texas A&M on the schedule. Those are all teams that are going to be in the top 10 of the country to start the year, at least the top 15. They avoid all of them. How is Georgia not a bye team in the playoff? How is Georgia not in Atlanta playing for the SEC title? I see no scenario where they don't, let alone all the talent they have coming back.
Yeah, injuries.
That's it. Something fluky.
164 media members voted in the SEC preseason poll. 88 of them picked the Dawgs to finish first. I think 54 of them picked the Texas Longhorns, and then it's a smattering of teams that you don't expect to win this conference. You expect Georgia every single year, at least under Kirby Smart, to be in the conference championship game. I mean, it was Mark Richt that could just never get over Saban, and always, every year, I think, Richt was there for 15 years and always felt like he had one or two losses sometime in the season with the talent they had at Georgia that we will go over. Because when you do the player from Georgia's past, I kept thinking of guys that Mark Richt coach. And I'm like, how did this team not accomplish more? And it's like, well, they had an unexplained loss here or there. And then in seasons when they had one loss, it was Nick Saban. It was it was the damn Tuscaloosifer.
Well, and I think Richt only beat Florida once.
That there, Urban Meyer.
I think only one time. I mean, he never beat Florida. I mean, very rarely. I mean, it's probably more than once, but I think he only beat Urban once. And Mark's the nicest guy ever. But they just couldn't get over the top. And Kirby played there. He's from Georgia. He played there. He knew it. He apprenticed with Saban at Alabama for all of that time. Then he came in at the perfect time. The other thing that's happened the last 25 years, guys, and I saw it firsthand, and this was 25 years ago when I was down there, Georgia high school football is nuts. From a talent standpoint, nuts. The one thing that the Georgia kids typically lacked from the Florida kids was those high school programs in Georgia didn't take care of their kids and make sure that academically they were in line. But and Richt was big on this. He got this kind of going in the right direction. Like some of those rural South Georgia districts, which are just loaded, like Valdosta, Lowndes, Camden County, Colquitt County, those have just college players everywhere, just all over the rosters, D1 guys. He was the first one that like kind of got those coaches to kind of see that it's more about just winning a Georgia State championship. You got to make sure these kids can go to college and be available, because I'm going to tell you something. The kids who couldn't get into school when I was down there were better than the kids who could.
And I do think with a lot of these schools, the succession is so important. So in Mark Richt's final season, 2015, you know, they were 10-3, 5-3 in SEC play. And so he didn't leave a cupboard bare for Kirby Smart to come take over in 2016. But it was Kirby Smart that just kind of jumps. I mean, he put this thing into 11th gear.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, it's, I mean, Georgia's been the program, in my opinion.
Yep.
Since 2016, like you envy a back-to-back championship. You envy how cool their uniforms look. You envy the success. Obviously, the speeding and the off-the-field issue, which has really just been issue in terms of their motor vehicle, their lack of care on the road. That's been the only thing that's really derailed anything positive about Georgia.
Real quick, before I get into this year's team, we talk about Ohio State. And what the Ohio State wide receiver room has done and all the money that the Ohio State wide receiver room has gotten in the past couple years. This is the 2021 Georgia defense now in the NFL this offseason. Jalen Carter, 4 years, $152 million. Trayvon Walker, 4 years, $110 million. Jordan Davis, 3 years, $78 million. Devontae Wyatt, 3 years, $57 million. Quay Walker, 3 years, $40.5 million. N'Kobe Dean, 3 years, $36 million. That's almost $500 million from that 2021 Georgia defense just in contracts they've signed this offseason.
Just this offseason. Yeah, I mean, he basically out-recruited Saban. That's what he did. He built Bama at Georgia.
It's crazy when we talk the SEC this year, how many people talk about Texas, and nobody really talks about Georgia. And nobody really talks about Kirby Smart. And when I was doing the research for Georgia today, realizing that they have the most experience coming back in the SEC with this coach, I mean, this Georgia team, when we talk about the top five teams in the country this year, you hear Ohio State, you hear Texas, you hear Oregon, you hear Notre Dame, you hear Indiana. Why aren't we talking about Georgia more?
Disrespect to Georgia.
We should
crazy.
Be.
Dude, especially when you look at the schedule. How's he not going 11-1? I mean, I think they're going to go 12-0. I don't think there's anybody on their schedule that beats them. Because I just am not as bullish. I mean, maybe there's a loss that happens, but we went over his record. He doesn't really lose to these teams.
Yeah.
And the teams on his schedule this year. I mean, Ole Miss, he's 2-3, but Kiffin's gone.
Georgia's also played in 7 straight SEC championship games.
Yeah.
That's a heck of a run.
Yeah. Yeah. They have become the Southern Ohio State. Like, they're the team every year that you say, well, we'll see in the playoff. That's a play. This is a 100% a playoff team. The only thing that would you would say, like, can they win a national championship? Well, that'll be on Gunnar Stockton. Can Gunnar Stockton elevate like Stetson Bennett did? Can he elevate and lift this team? If he can, there's no holes. Their offense is going to be more than fine. Defensively, they're going to be vicious. Just vicious. So, you know, there's no holes. And the schedule is the most manageable Georgia schedule that I've seen. And because they usually play a big non-conference game at the stop. And when they added Texas and Oklahoma, they made them play Texas. And they played Bama, who they normally don't play in the regular season as well. So they had to play, like, Bama, Texas, and a non-conference game. That's all gone now. I mean, they can wade into this thing a little bit.
KJ Bolden, their safety, is a guy some Buckeye fans may remember because that was a recruiting battle that came down mm-hmm. to Ohio State and Georgia. He's one of the best players in the country. Like, if you enjoyed watching Caleb Downs last year, and I think they're different kind of players back mm-hmm. there, but you'll enjoy watching KJ Bolden.
Yep. Yeah. They are. This is a national championship team. Of all the SEC teams we've done, this one's ready made. The schedule's ready made, the roster's ready made. They're good to go. We'll hit the categories on the dogs. Former legendary Georgia quarterback Buck Belue going to join us in about 17 minutes from now for his perspective on the dogs. That's all coming up. Bishop and Friends right here.
Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Degenerate Gamblers Deep Middle at Scotty Vegas every Sunday morning at 9 for On the Money.
Presented by Krieger Ford, your best bet for a new car or truck. Visit Krieger Ford on Morse Road today or go online at KriegerFord.com.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Partly sunny skies for us today. It's filtered cloud cover works in from the west. Highs reach the mid to upper 80s. Overnight, increasing clouds, lows in the upper 60s. We'll top out pretty close to 80 on Saturday. More clouds and sunshine. Spotty showers and thunderstorms, especially as the day goes on. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. The friends are the guests and listeners.
Reese and Baker just work here.
Back to work. Back to work. Everybody. Work, 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 work. Work, work.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Homes in Columbus are under constant attack by pests like termites, ants, or mice. Don't wait for an invasion. Protect your property and family with Rose Pest Solutions Home Service Program. The Rose Home Service Program provides year-round protection for one flat annual fee with regularly scheduled visits. Rose is local, family-owned, trusted by your neighbors in Ohio for 165 years, guys. Get peace of mind today. Call 800-966-ROSE or visit rosepestsolutions.com. Time for the categories on the Georgia Dogs. Yep. Now we've heard this one a lot. Glory, glory to old Georgia. There you go. College football 26 adaptability grade, Reese.
Well, the success on the field is an A+. The NIL seems to be coordinated enough to where they're still landing five stars. They're still getting guys out of the transfer portal that they need. They got a big 6'4 wide receiver from Georgia Tech out of the portal, but they don't need too much because they've done such a good job recruiting the best in the South and some of the best from around the country. So it's an A.
It's an A for me too. The only reason it isn't an A+, and I know this is difficult because they won back-to-back national championships in 21 and 22, but we just heard one of the coaches, I think it was Brett Bielema, say you can't look at the history of college football past 3 years. So they haven't won one in the last three. That's why it's not an A+.
I'm going to go A- here because I think that they weren't quite as organized as they could be in NIL right away. You've seen a little dip in their recruiting. It's marginal, but everybody's dipped in recruiting. So I just don't know if they were quite prepared right away for what was going to come in the sport. But it's still really, really good. I mean, it's A-. Uniform brand grade for the Georgia Dogs, Reese.
It's an A- for me. And to your point about the recruiting and the NIL-ness of recruiting, mm-hmm. I think Kirby Smart was reluctant for a little longer than he probably should have been in embracing all of that. But A- for me. The jerseys are awesome. You're playing in the games, that stadium, everything, you know, with Georgia football is great. You just pay attention to the speed limit, guys.
Yeah.
Like, that's such a problem that you can't not think of it when you think of Georgia football.
Yeah, I think this is an A as well. One of the iconic uniforms. I love that, like Ohio State, they have the silver pants, so they're never, unless it's a third jersey, oh, you know, monochrome the whole way. I love the contrast, and I just think when you think football, like college football, especially the last 20 years, you're not right in the history without Georgia.
No, and it's, I mean, he awoken a sleeping giant is what Kirby did there, and they've maintained it. Yeah, I think it's an A. I think, you know, everything from McAfee doing that, you know, what I hear coming down the track, big old red and black, like all of that stuff, like it all hits. And the stadium hits, the atmosphere hits. When you think of Georgia, there is an identity to it. It very much reminds me of Saban Bama. Like, there is a seriousness to it. There's a defensive punch you in your mouth to it. There's an identity to it. And I think they've crushed it. And they've crushed their state, which is loaded with talent in, from a recruiting standpoint. Historical player you'd pick for this Georgia team. Holy smokes.
You imagine A.J. Green on this squad?
Good grief.
Feels like that's all they need.
So there is every part of me that wanted to pick Champ Bailey and help both sides of the ball. I understand Nate Frazier is a good running back. Chauncey Bowens is also pretty darn good behind him. They aren't Herschel Walker, though.
No.
Give me Walker.
I mean, Herschel Walker is, he might be the, he's on a short list of best players to ever play the sport. He's the first one I thought of. There's a million you could go here because of the amount of NFL talent that they've had come through that school in the last 30 years. Herschel Walker is kind of the no-brainer one. A.J. Green is a very good one. Give me Matt Stafford. Give me Stafford with this operation, with Kirby and that defense. Be pretty good. Would they get an official visit from Vince Howard, Reese?
I think they would. I think he'd be probably grew up. If he grew up in this time, you don't watch Saturdays without trying to figure out, wait, what's Georgia doing? I think everything would appeal to him, and they'd have a decent enough NIL offer to keep them in contention.
Yep. I think that Georgia would prioritize him, and they would get him to come.
So I'm going to say no. I don't think that they would, because they're not exactly known as a quarterback developer. And in fact, they had the number one quarterback in the country committed to Georgia in last year's class. Jared Curtis, I believe, is his name. And he flipped to Vanderbilt right before signing day. So I don't think that they would. I think that they would, like, Smash Williams. Yeah, I think they'd get a visit from him. Like Tim Riggins. Yeah, for sure. I just don't know that they would for Vince, because they just haven't, they don't have that quarterback development, and they're not thought of as an offensively forward-thinking program. And so I'm going to go no on Vince. I don't think Vince would give the Georgia Dogs a visit. Coach grade for Kirby, Reese.
It's an A+. He said what? He's lost 21 games total. I mean, they're in the SEC championship game all the time, back-to-back national championships. They're not going anywhere.
It's an A++, like whatever you can have above that. There, I don't think there's any argument that says that he's not a top three coach in college football. I believe it's him, it's Ryan, it's Cignetti, and then you can argue about everybody else.
Yeah, it's an A+, and this one is. Just because I saw it. I mean, I was in Tallahassee. We covered North Florida high school football and South Georgia high school football. So when you cover South Georgia high school football, you're covering Valdosta High. Valdosta High is the winningest program in the history of high school football, in the history of the country in high school football. They have over 900 wins, more than Massillon, more than anybody. And that region, I think it's region one, that region has some of the most talented teams and kids you've ever seen in your life, and multiple of one state championships. Valdosta has, Lowndes has, Camden County has, Colquitt County has. They've been like number one teams in the country. Kirby was the first one who succeeded. Others tried. He was the first one that succeeded in putting a fence around his home state. And he was the perfect coach at the perfect time to take advantage of the talent in the state of Georgia. He benefited that Florida was down because they used to get poached. Benefited that Florida State was bound because they used to poach him. But he kept everybody in Georgia that you'd want at Georgia. My God, they had you had high school kids, California high school kids, who were transferring to play high school football in Georgia to play for the Dogs. Like, Raiola did that. He didn't end up in Georgia, but he did that to play there. There was another kid from California who transferred to Valdosta to try to play for the Dogs. Like, he's done it. It's the perfect coach at the perfect time. Yes, A++, all of those things for Kirby at Georgia. Sliding doors moment, Reese.
Well, I was going to pick, was back in 2003, they lost week three, or their fourth game of the season. They lost to LSU 10-17. That season's huge because Mark Richt's probably got one of his most talented early teams there. But the 2025 college football playoff quarterfinal game against Ole Miss, like, if Georgia wins that, because they got the first round bye being SEC champions, they, I think they beat Miami. And then what the hell does that look like? Georgia, Indiana in a national championship?
I think it was the hiring of Kirby Smart. And Georgia has always been relevant, and they've always been good. But he's taken it to another level. Two of their four national championships have come in his 10 seasons so far. He has more conference championships than any coach in Georgia history, not named Vince Dooley. And Vince Dooley was there double the amount of time that Kirby has been there. And Kirby will probably catch him and pass him in the not-too-distant future here. So I think Kirby Smart's just upped the game and changed it all.
I think the sliding doors moment is actually NIL and free transfer. Because I think if that doesn't happen, he's got Saban Bama is what he's looking at. I think Georgia would have hogged talent for the next decade. And I think it would have been them and us. And I mean, I think they just would have replaced Bama. I think they would have won three or four more national titles. But now all of a sudden, some of his talents at Ole Miss or talent that he used to get at LSU or somewhere else, but he was in a position, I mean, he won the two back-to-back, but I think they could have won, the way that he was recruiting, they were in a position to win four or five. And NIL flipped that. Now they're adjusting and this team looks great, but they could have been on a Bama run if not for NIL and free transfer, where they win four or five national titles in a 10-year period. Win it all, make the playoff too soon, or flame out for the Georgia Dogs, Reese.
I think it's a win it all.
Yeah.
Yep, win it all.
Yeah, this is, the stars have aligned, the schedule's allowed for it, returning quarterback, defense is going to be ridiculous. Yeah, this is, if there are six teams that can win a national title, and maybe there's more, this is one of them. And that will be the expectation down in Athens. A guy who won a national title quarterbacking the Dogs all the way back in 1980, responsible for one of the coolest play calls you've ever heard, the Run Lindsey Run play. He's the one who threw the ball. He's former Georgia quarterback Buck Blue. He's going to join us in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on the
Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
When General Sherman marched through Georgia, he was listening to this show.
Use your skills for good, young warrior.
This is Bishop and Friends.
It's probably not the rejoin for welcoming our buddy Buck Ballew to the program, but the former Georgia legend joins. He is the host of the Buck Ballew Show on 680 The Fan in Atlanta, quarterbacked the Dogs to a national title in 1980. He's the guy who threw the pass on one of the most famous calls in the history of college football, the Run Lindsey Run call, all the way back. Buck, thank you so much for taking the time. I'll just start here with you because I was in North Florida at a CBS affiliate. We covered South Georgia. We covered Lowndes and Valdosta and Thomasville and Colquitt County and all those teams. And I remember thinking at the time, if anybody could just keep all these dudes in the state, look out. And obviously Vince did that when you guys were there. How has Kirby been able to do that now over what is just an absolutely legendary run in Athens?
Well, yeah, and we're just thrilled to have Kirby Smart running the program. I mean, 10 great years having him run the show. And he's a South Georgia boy. You know, played at Bainbridge for his father, which is in southwest Georgia, over near the Alabama-Florida line over in there. And so, you know, these South Georgia boys, they grow up pretty tough, you know. So his culture, look, Georgia wants to run the football. So you want to stop the run, then you're going to have to maybe put an extra man in the box. And then at that point, they're looking to make some more explosive plays than they did a year ago. I think with these the guys they've got lining up, they've got a couple guys that could be playmakers for them on the outside. But this is a guy that wants to play rough and tough football, and the Georgia Letterman, the fan base for the most part here, they're just thrilled to have Kirby Smart and realize he's not looking to leave. Mm-mm. Wife played it in Athens, played basketball at the University of Georgia. They've got a young family growing up. He's done the NFL thing. I think he's one of the coaches that figured out, I need to be at the college level working with young men, teenagers, helping them make that transition. And it's a team culture. It's not a me culture. And you got to want to come in there and work and play some physical football to really play for him.
And, Buck, the thing that I think about when I think of Georgia is just toughness, and I just think of defense. And I'm looking at this year's team, and I see 8 starters back on a defense that was pretty dang good a year ago. Of course, you can lament the loss to Ole Miss, but at the same time, 8 starters back at Georgia, guys that Kirby and his staff have brought along, who have developed. That's a pretty scary thought for the rest of the SEC in college football.
Yeah, they two guys in particular, too, to keep an eye on is one on each side of the line of scrimmage. And Georgia with Juan Gaston, who had to play a lot a year ago, tackle. They played some at guard. I mean, this guy's a 6'7", 340-pound man running around up front that's really athletic. So he'll be in his second year, expecting him to take a big step forward. He will be a future star on the offensive line. And then on the defensive side, they've got Elijah Griffin, who was the top-rated defensive lineman in his recruiting class. Again, he was a freshman trying to play, trying to thrive a year ago. Took some lumps, but flashed some great ability. And this guy was recruited to be one of the better players. So that's encouraging. Mark Richt had a lot of success here, and big fan of what he did. Kirby, the one thing he made a change when he came in, he made it a priority to improve the line of scrimmage play, and they've done a great job of that.
They really have, and have really just absolutely loaded up that program. It'll come down to the defense is going to be there. We'll get into the schedule in a second. The question now will be, can Gunnar Stockton elevate that team? Had a really nice season last year, 70%, 2,800 yards, 24 touchdowns, 5 picks. More will be expected, obviously, if they are to win a national championship. What have you made of Gunnar's development during his time in Athens?
Well, he's relentless working on his game. It's really impressive, and there's not a guy in that locker room that doesn't respect him. And he broke all these high school passing records here in the state of Georgia. Deshaun Watson, Trevor Lawrence, I mean, they put up some huge numbers, and he ripped it up, but he is a guy that during the offseason has worked to get better in the pocket. Work in the middle of the field, layering balls in over the linebackers in front of these safeties, getting better at that. There's been a real focus on that. If you can run the football, then you can play action pass. And they've got, I believe, the top tight end room in the country that only keeps getting better. They got 3, 4, 5 guys at the tight end spot look great, man. So again, play action pass is big. I see Gunnar at some of these charity golf events, and I'm saying, Gunnar, I need you to get down a little quicker. He just took some hellish shots here the last couple of years, and it gets right up. But he was a top 10 quarterback a year ago, so they're expecting him to bring that performance level to the field this year.
Buck, I look at the schedule, I look at the roster, and I say this looks like, and we're doing 20 of the most interesting teams in the program, and there's a handful that feel like, yeah, go win the national title. This feels like that to me. This Georgia team feels like, yeah, go win the national title, along with Ohio State and a handful of others, Oregon, Notre Dame, maybe, who knows. If they come up short, Where are spots on this roster where you look at them and go, well, I need to see a little bit more there?
Well, look, the competition's as tough as it's ever been out there. You know, a lot of people poo-pooing on the SEC right now, but, you know, the depth, the quality of depth in this conference is still pretty impressive. You know, I think the one thing that could put them over the top is having an ex-wide receiver, sort of like, you know, the Buckeyes have. Somebody that can win these one-on-one matchups and these big, close games you're going to play. Isaiah Kanyon is going to fill that void this year, transferred from Georgia Tech. He's a local Georgia kid. A lot of his friends and former teammates in high school went to Georgia. He went to Tech. Looked great a year ago, running routes, catching the ball. But we're talking 6'4", you know, 215, and Kanyon steps in, and he's a guy a little bit under the radar. You know, I don't think a lot of the national guys really have figured out that, you know, Georgia does have some skill and talent at the wide receiver position.
Yeah, they certainly do. The schedule, and certainly when the SEC added Texas and Oklahoma, you know, they really played the hits. I mean, and the Dogs had to play Texas the same year. And as I know, and of course, you know, and just for our audience's perspective, Georgia doesn't always play Bama, but then all of a sudden they're playing Bama too. I look at the schedule this year. Bama's still on it. No Texas. You do get Oklahoma at home. At Ole Miss in early November will be tricky. Obviously, a lot of these places are tricky in terms of the passion and all of it, but it does seem more manageable than it's been in the last couple of years, Buck. What do you make of the schedule and trying to get through it?
Yeah, you know, it's you got to play ball all year long, and somehow you've got to be peaking toward the end of the season. So, look, you got to show up early. The Alabama game, for whatever reason, has been a tough hurdle for Georgia. I mean, it's not like they hadn't beat them in the national championship game, but have lost some hard-fought close games here, especially lately. So the Georgia nation's really nervous about that game. I don't know. I think Georgia's a little better. I don't know if Alabama's as good this year. Which, if you're a Georgia fan, you sort of like that. You like that scenario, but we'll see. You show up every week, and you know you're going to get somebody's best shot. You know that.
Yeah. Buck, outside of the Dogs, you know, last week we had SEC Media Days. Is there a team that you like that you think maybe people aren't talking enough about in the SEC outside of, obviously, Georgia's the preeminent favorite, but is there anybody else you like?
Well, look, you know, Alabama, if they hit this quarterback thing right, Austin Mack, the vet, going up against this young kid, Keelan Russell, who is a five-star quarterback. I mean, if DeBoer can get that right, I mean, the way Alabama's recruited, they should be able to, you know, be a tough out. Keep an eye on the new Lane Kiffin at LSU. They had that big NIL budget, and they took advantage of it. I like Leavitt transferring in from Arizona State at quarterback. So they should be elite. Texas with Arch, I'm expecting Arch to take a big step forward this year in year number two, more comfortable, more in control. If they can figure out that red zone offense, then, you know, Texas is going to be a tough out, too. Ole Miss, I wouldn't count them out. I mean, got Trinidad Chambliss, who's amazing, and it really sort of single-handedly knocked Georgia out of the playoffs last year. They threw it 51 times. Georgia didn't sack him once.
Jeez.
And this guy is one of the best players in college football this season, so. Yeah, keep an eye on them, too.
Going to be a fun season. I thank you so much for your time and giving us a little bit of it today. It was a great privilege having you on. Thanks for your time, bud.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, there he goes. Buck Ballew, the Buck Ballew Show, 680 The Fan in Atlanta. Georgia quarterback led them to the national championship in 1980, multiple-year starter there. He is also, this is pretty remarkable, and just I'll give you the Ohio State equivalent of this. He is the only quarterback to start all 4 years for Valdosta High School and won a national championship at Valdosta. So this would be similar to an Ohio schoolboy quarterback starting all 4 years at Massillon, winning a national high school championship at Massillon, and then starting 3 years at Ohio State and winning a national championship at Ohio State. He also played baseball at Georgia. So, bit of a dude is the long and short of Buck Valu, and just an absolute legend in the Peach State. Get you three things on a Friday up next. Bishop and Friends right here on
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Now, resident gambling degenerates Steve Biddle and Scotty Vegas for On the Money. Sunday mornings at 9.
Presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Columbus.
Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-589-9966.
The Fan. All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Reeser's mustache is so nice, it has its own area code.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, Reese, what do you have on the poll today?
Daily Fan Poll sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub. It asks, how many current college football coaches would you take over Kurt Cignetti? Your options are 0, 1, 2, 3, or more. 30% of you say you'd take one coach over Sig. 24% say you'd take two coaches over Sig. 26% of you say you would not take any coaches over Kurt Cignetti. And then 18% of you say you would take three or more coaches before Kurt Cignetti.
Obviously Ryan for sure. And then it's Kirby. But I think I like what Bake did, where he just, those three are on their own. They're on their own pedestal. Then I think it's there's a bunch of cats out there that got to prove something. Like Sark and Lanning, they got to prove something. There's a lot of those guys out there, but those three are elevated above. I think this year is going to be fascinating for Indiana. Really fascinating. Third straight year, third new quarterback. You know, can he really do this again? I'm done doubting him. Done doubting him. Ultimate respect, all of it. But can he really do this thing again? I know how to Google him and all of those things. And I do respect the hell out of him. But boy, it's one more time. And I don't think they're going anywhere. I think they're a playoff team. I'd be shocked if they weren't. Time for three things on a Friday. Hit it, guys.
One, two, three
things.
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
Well, today's the day. It kind of snuck up on me. It shouldn't have. He's been doing stuff all summer, but today is the official start of high school football practice. Now, they've been doing camps and lifting and all this stuff all season long, but NBC is staring down the barrel of two-a-days. So the way that we're doing it in our town is he's going to practice from 4:30 to 9:30 tonight. So one big five-hour practice is the way that it's going to go. I don't know how we got here that I have a high schooler. I don't understand how it happened. I guess I blinked and here we are. I think he's ready for it. I think he's excited for it, but it is going to be pretty crazy to have an Ohio high school football player, even if it's freshman, JV, whatever it is. It's going to be pretty crazy to have one of those this fall.
Whatever detergent you use, vinegar also works when you're washing all of those pads. And good the point. Green Gold Bond I found had the best effect.
Reese, you didn't just take them and hang them up menthol. at the car wash and power spray them?
So for two-a-days, after the first practice, they were hung up. After the second practice, they were taken home because they had to be washed. Because, again, once you get late August, it's almost unwearable after one practice of it if you just leave it. And then after two practices, you can't leave it hanging up in your locker room because then it's so much worse. First thing, real quick. So CBS Sports has put Tony Romo on leave until further notice. John Aran says J.J. Watt's going to join Nance and Wolfson as their lead NFL team during Romo's absence. Again, no word on exactly when that leave is going to end.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, is that a leave-worthy offense?
For that position, probably.
It's right. Yeah, could kind of go either way. I mean, I'm not minimizing the severity. You wonder if that's a Wally Pipp situation.
You would think with enough time between when it happened in the NFL season, if he was taking the steps that he needed to, if there was an issue to take care of the issue, that he would be able to be on the games. Maybe this is just, well, we want to make sure through the preseason or whatever. Maybe this is, hey, we can try out J.J. Watt here in the preseason. Wow. I don't know.
That's what I'm wondering, yeah.
If you didn't hate NIL already, maybe this is the thing that will get you there. These are two tweets from Dan Furman. He says Rutgers just found a $5 million loophole to pay their college athletes with your tax dollars, which is technically a violation of the NCAA. He says that the New Jersey budget includes $5 million for Rutgers athletics under events, attraction, and marketing. But according to reporting, lawmakers specifically requested the money for NIL. Public dollars are now building the machine that helps schools compete. To steal a line from another state, another show on this station, go to hell.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty duplicitous. Number two for me, I'm not sure how long it'll last, but I'm glad for the palate cleanser that is Kyle Whittingham at Michigan. It's kind of nice having an adult in that job. I don't hate Kyle Whittingham. He didn't hate Ryan Day. Ryan Day don't hate him. I'm sure we'll if he beats the Buckeyes, you know, at the end of this season, you're going to hate the program and you're going to win that game more than anything else. But I do think a little de-escalation, and I'm sure I'll be in the minority on this station that says this, but a little de-escalation of that is okay, I think. And I look forward to seeing, you know, what he can do there. Obviously, you want Ohio State to take care of business every time they play him, but I do think it's kind of nice to have a little bit of a palate cleanser and an adult. They've had children running that program for about the last 15 years. They have an adult in the room now, and I'm kind of looking forward to that as a little bit of a palate cleanser.
Real quick for my first thing, white vinegar. Don't do apple cider vinegar. That's not going to help you at all. No. To our conversation about that Shohei Ohtani double gold logo card that was sold for $11 million. So that's third, only behind a $12.9 million Michael Jordan Kobe Bryant dual logo man and a $12.6 million 1952 Mickey Mantle card. I checked Baker for that 1989 Upper Deck Ken Griffey rookie. If it's a PSA 10, Fanatics is asking $20,000 for it. Mm. They've got it sold back in March for $9,900. So a little difference between the asking and the selling price, but could be worth it if they're able to find it in perfect condition.
That's the problem, is the PSA 10 grade.
You no idea what those.
Not to hit up my old friend and see if he's opened those boxes yet.
Yeah,
maybe we need to go looking through some cards. Second thing for me, this is the first weekend in quite some time that outside of my normal working Saturday and Sunday morning, which, by the way, wake up Sunday, call in the call-in show with me and Scotty, that I don't have anything going on. So I'm not really sure what I'm going to do with myself.
God,
I don't know what to do with my hands.
Several female listeners I know would be interested in maybe taking your attentions there, Bake. We know how that goes.
Sounds like a lot of work.
Number three for me. I got to give the blonde credit. So last night the boys were looking for something to watch. She was trying to find a movie that they could all watch that would be interesting. And normally I'm the one that does this, but she did a good job. I came out of my office last night and she was watching Adventures in Babysitting. Fantastic. That's a great job of parenting out of her. That one still holds up. All the kids locked into it for, it's only like an hour and a half. Like, it's quick, it's easy, still fun, still holds up. Good job out of the blonde of finding a very quality movie for the whole family last night.
Yeah, I'm looking for something to check out over the last couple of days. And I did see a trailer for The Gentleman, Guy Ritchie's drama / action / kind of comedy. Is coming out for its second season on September 3rd. So you got time to watch it. I would recommend it. And then also, wish me luck. I'm bending the knee this weekend.
Oh, what? So, just big news. Yeah.
Good Lord. Right, we got 10 seconds.
Wish me luck.
Goodness gracious.
Good Lord. See how it goes.
She's got the Uno reverse card and, you know, maybe.
Oh, my God.
Talk to you Monday, Reese. Folks.
That Holy is, hell.
That was the ultimate Friday afternoon seconds. News drop.
Yeah, we're going to go.
I guess Rothman and Ice are next. Good Lord.
I guess
we're back Monday, maybe with all sorts of stories
we'll
to tell.
Bishop and Friends. Good luck.
Right here on the
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Save big on everything for your next project now at Menards. Breathe easier with Best Air Ultimate Allergen Air Filters. They trap large airborne particles to keep allergens out of your home, and they last up to 90 days. Save big on all Best Air products at Menards and refresh your home today. View our selection of air filtration products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find great deals happening now.
Save big.